on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Big program tonight. We've got WGAE, the Writers Guild of America East, President Michael Winthrop. He's going to be here talking about net neutrality. What's going to happen with the Internet? Are we going to have what corporate America wants? Two speeds, one for the big payers, one for the big corporate special interests, and the rest, the old AOL style, kind of slow dial up for the rest of us. I sure hope not. And one of the things that I've been a supporter of net neutrality from the beginning, I think we should have an open internet for everybody to have equal access where content matters more than your ability to pay. That's something I think is very important. It'll be interesting talking with Michael Winship. Also, Li Fang is going to be here talking about our Alan West and this idiotic idea that we should be censoring people who reported on WikiLeaks. We should be censoring those media outlets like the New York Times for reporting on the WikiLeaks story. And, you know, I don't know about you, but there's that little thing in the Constitution, you know, right there at number one. And I don't know how you could claim to be, you know, someone who believes in the Constitution and not have read the very first one. I mean, that's what gets me. Number one! I could understand if it was like 23 and you got bogged down, you know, maybe something came on TV, you skipped over it, you glanced at whatever, but not the first one. You can't screw up the first one. But he seems to think, hey, fine, well, then good. We'll censor them. Nuts. Also, Erica Smiley from Jobs with Justice will be here talking about their Scrooge of the Year. Initially, we here at the program had chosen Express Script for their firing of 1,000 workers and closing two plants here in Pennsylvania. Since that decision, we kind of gone back a little bit. They kept one plant open, saved several hundred jobs there. Not because the company wanted to, mind you, because the union put up such a good battle. And look, it's not a victory. They just minimized the damage, but it was still the working people able to stand up together. And that's something we don't see much. That's something we see much nowadays. And also in the next segment, our good friend Erwin Aronson is going to be here talking about Mitzi. Our good friend Mitzi Romney and his, you got to give him credit. They're consistent. They want health savings account. That's their answer to all the, you know, the 50-some million people who have no health insurance. We should give them individual accounts so that we can say they've got insurance. It's individual accounts. Granted, there's no money in those accounts, but they have them. Isn't that wonderful? Everybody's insured because everybody has an account. Now what he's saying, what old Mitzi's saying is, well, we shouldn't have government-run unemployment insurance compensation. That should be a private thing, and each worker should have his own private unemployment compensation fund. And I'm going, really? But again, you got to give them credit. They're consistent. I don't know if you saw this Quinnipiac poll here today, brand new, right off the hot off the presses, talking about Pennsylvania and some of the good things, saying Pennsylvania voters are optimistic over the next 4 years because of the new governor elect Tom Corbett, 59-27. Say they're optimistic. 66-26% back the idea of selling the state liquor stores to help balance the budget. And you know what? Right off the bat, when you go in, and I read the question, and the question as they posed it, again, one of these very, really disingenuous type questions. Would you raise taxes to balance the budget or sell the state store? Of course, everybody's going to say sell the state store because I don't want my taxes raised. And that's assuming that you're going to get enough money to balance the budget. They're not. They're not getting anywhere close to that kind of money. But it's that kind of push-pull messaging. It's that kind of, well, would you rather me shoot you in the head or give you a big birthday cake? Oh, gee, let me think about that. It's like a comedian I know, Eddie Izzard. He does this, cake or death, cake or death, cake or death. You know, it's that kind of question. I mean, really, honestly, truthfully, would you like this really, really bad thing or this good thing? It's amazing stuff. But they went down through the things. And what I was surprised at is people don't want to sell the turnpike, don't want to lease the turnpike. Only 17% were in favor of that, which I found interesting. 14% say lay off the state workers, which I guess it's easy for you to say when it's not you being laid off. Only 7% say raise taxes. Asked what their least favorite solution were. 47% of the voters put raising taxes on the bottom of their list. 28% was laying off state workers. 14% name leasing the turnpike. I'm one of those. That's one of my least favorite. 7% say selling the liquor stores. And I think all of that selling off of the assets is a bad idea. And what I found interesting, they keep throwing this number out. We're going to get $2 billion. And I want to know where that came from. Because, you know, I understand there are 850 licenses out there. There are 750 retail licenses. There's 100 wholesale licenses out there. Now, if you do your math, just a little bit of math, each, to get $2 billion, each one of those 850 licenses would have to go for about $2.4 million. That's a lot of money. And the argument has been, well, you know, mom and pops will buy these licenses up and you'll have small stores. And what mom and pop operation is going to be able to spend $2.3 million? Who's going to have this? And I got to be honest with you, nowhere do you get a liquor license for $2.3 million. If you're selling it, if you can get $2.3 million anywhere else in the country, take it. In New Jersey, from what I understand, the average license goes between $50,000 and $250,000. If you're in a big city, you might get $250,000. If you're in some little small town, you're probably going to get $50,000. So I'm looking at this and I'm going, you know, in order for this to work out, this $2.3 million per license, I don't see anybody doing that. So what then the argument will have to be is to get to that $2 billion number, we'll have to issue more licenses, right? And then the question becomes, do we really want a liquor store on every street corner? Do we want 10,000 liquor stores across the state? I mean, there are 850 right now. In order to get to the $2 billion where they tell us they need to be, we would have to, I think, we're going to have to come up with like 10,000 licenses. And even then, as you sell more licenses, the prices come down. To me, this is a race to the bottom. Again, it's another asset that we have as taxpayers that they want to steal from us, that they want to give away for nothing. And understand this. These state stores, these wine and spirit shops, they bring in about $500 million a year in revenue, $400 million in tax revenue, and $100 million in profit. Profit. Think about that for a minute. We're bringing all this money in, and they want to sell it off? Doesn't make a lot of sense. To me, what we should be talking about, what we should actually be talking about is, oh, I don't know, taxing the Marcellus Shale? We haven't heard much about that lately, have we? I guess it's almost been one of those things where, as a society, we decided we're not going to tax the Marcellus Shale. Tom's in charge, took a whole bunch of money from the industry, has appointed some energy people to his transition team. It's a done deal, I guess. I don't think that's smart. I think before we go selling off assets, before we go leasing the turnpike, before we go selling off the state wine and spirit shops, we should do other things first. Oh, I don't know. How about smokeless tobacco and cigars? Whatever happened to that? One of the only states in the country that refuses to tax these two things. And for me, the big one, the Delaware loophole. The fact that you've got Pennsylvania companies who have a P.O. box over in Delaware, and they launder all their profits. Launder all their profits through that one P.O. box. They're not even actual offices. Just like, you know, U.S. corporations do in the Cayman Islands. They have a P.O. box, and they funnel all their profits through there, so they don't have to pay taxes on it. And again, I go back to this, you know, they keep saying, well, you know, Pennsylvania's got the highest tax rate in the country. Highest, one of the highest. They're right up there. Only 3/4 of the companies don't pay it. So if 3/4 of the companies don't pay it, do we really have the highest rate? I guess we do for the folks who are stuck paying it, these small business people who can't take advantage of these loopholes. They're the ones who are getting the shaft. They're the ones who should be screaming bloody murder. And they should be the ones out there pushing to close this loophole. Because I've said from the beginning, what you do is you close that loophole up, you lower the taxes on everybody, especially the people who are paying it. Doesn't that make sense to you? I mean, before we go having a fire sale on our house, shouldn't we look for some, oh, I don't know, alternative ideas, like the Marcellus Shale, like cigars and smokeless tobacco, like the Delaware loophole? Wouldn't that seem to make a little bit of sense? I mean, it does to me. Before I go selling off my assets, maybe try and raise revenue. Because I think we've got it in our mind that, oh, we need to tighten our belts, which means less spending, and which means selling off, you know, a couple of things that we have extra. How about raising revenue? How about looking at the places that are getting away scot-free right now and saying, okay, you know, hey, times are tough. We'd like you to contribute a little bit. Just a little. That's all. Pay your fair share, especially the big corporations with this Delaware loophole, because they're the ones who use our infrastructure. They're the folks who are benefiting the most. And this Quinnipiac poll, which the right is really out there pushing, 66-26, they agree with selling the liquor stores. But if you look at the way it was worded, there wasn't really a choice. And that's why a lot of these polls drive me nuts, because you're not really given an honest choice. It's amazing, amazing stuff. And you know what bothers me? The other part of this, 51-41% margin, voters are okay with laying off state workers. To me, that shows a very short-sighted mentality. Okay, let's say we lay off the prison guards. Let's say we lay off the food inspectors. Let's say we lay off a couple of the people working at the nuke plants. Let's say we lay off some policemen. Let's say we lay off some, you know, some firemen. Let's say we lay all these people off. Lay them off. Who does those jobs? Who guards the prisoners? Who takes care of the the elderly in their home. Who does these jobs? You know what happens? The state privatizes it. And you and I end up paying more. Because they've yet to show me on a consistent basis where privatization has been better for the taxpayer than having just a boring old state worker doing the job. Someone who goes in every day, dedicated to their craft, dedicated to their state, doing their job. I've yet to find it. And if you've got a situation, I'd love to hear it. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
AFSCME President Gerald McEntee says false and absurd statements attacking public workers as a privileged class are being incessantly repeated by right-wing media. That attack campaign, even falsely blaming public employees for the economic crisis, is being echoed by right-wing talk shows and conservative Republican politicians. AFSCME is defending public employees and their families from this assault with a Stop the Lies campaign. McEntee says by blaming public workers, the right wing is trying to divert attention away from the real privileged class on Wall Street and their reckless behaviors that enriched them while plunging the rest of us into a financial crisis. For more information on the Stop the Lies campaign, go to AFSCME.org/stop the lies. Rite Aid drugstore workers are leafleting dozens of Rite Aid stores nationwide in a national day of action today to call attention to what the UFCW's Bill Epstein calls the company's culture of corporate greed. Epstein says Rite Aid workers are defending themselves from an assault on their living standards and job rights.
It's ironic that at a time when corporate profits are at a record high, unemployment is also at a record high. There's no question that the way this economy has been treating working men and women has been a disaster. If you see union members outside of Rite Aid's today, please take their flyers and give them to a store manager or to workers inside the store and ask them to pass it along to their corporate headquarters. You can visit Facebook and Twitter and pick up a message there and send it to Rite Aid corporate headquarters.
In a time when airlines are gutting unions and employee contracts, workers at Alaska Airlines came out on top. Jesse Russell reports.
The new proposed contract between Alaska Airlines and its clerical office and passenger service employees, represented by the International Association of Machinists, is likely to be approved by members based on the quality of the contract. The new three-year contract will see a $1,500 signing bonus, raises, expanded job security protections, and entry into the airline's performance-based pay annual incentive plan. On top of that, workers won't see increases in health care costs. The contract also offers some workers the option of telecommuting if they can perform their work at home. In a statement, Alaska Airlines Vice President of Human Resources and Labor Relations, Kelly Dobbs, said the agreement reflects the outstanding customer service efforts of employees. The two sides have been in negotiation since March of 2010.
700 was the unlucky number on Tuesday. News leaked early in the day that internet search engine Yahoo could be laying off between 600 and 700 employees. This would be the fourth layoff in 3 years for the company and would amount to a workforce cut of 5%. Northern Indiana, already struggling with a high unemployment rate, was also hit with some bad news as TJX Company announced it would be shuttering a distribution center for its discount chain, AJ Wright. If that plan moves forward, 700 employees at the center will start receiving pink slips in February. This newscast made possible in part by the American Federation of Teachers, a union of professionals.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Exposing GOP hypocrisy. The Rick Smith Show.
They will try to make you crawl. And they know what you're saying makes sense at all.
Show 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Last night on the program, we talked about Mitt Romney's his great grand, epiphany. He had this grand vision. Yes, we can How can we screw working people even worse? Let's see. Oh, yeah. Let's privatize unemployment compensation insurance. Yes, that is. And then they can have ownership of their unemployment. Yeah. Here to help me work through this is our good friend, attorney Erwin Aronson. Erwin, welcome to the program.
Good evening. Good to hear your voice.
I appreciate you taking time for me. I look at what you know, the front runner for 2012 is saying about this unemployment issue, and my head's about to explode.
Well, you just can't make this stuff up, Rick.
I wish I was that smart. I do. But here he is saying the best thing that we can do to help workers is to give them their, quote, individual unemployment savings account, which they could exercise direct control over their finances.
Well, he says more than that. I mean, that's bad enough, and it's an outrage, and we'll get back to that. But he also says in the same breath that in order to create jobs, we ought to give financial incentives to employers in the United States at the same time that we strip people of their unemployment insurance.
Yeah, I mean, but isn't that the GOP logic, that if we give the wealth class all they could possibly want, that they will bestow upon us these great rewards of, you know, maybe being able to feed ourselves?
Well, it's the old promise of trickle-down economics. You know, if we feed the elephants, someday the sparrows might get to eat.
Yeah, but I've been trickled on enough, and, you know, it isn't that river of honey that I was promised. It's a different yellowy substance.
Yeah, I think you're quite right. Mitt has this crazy proposal. It ignores some fundamental facts. First fact is that Mitt and his GOP pals are the ones who are saying there's already too much government, and immediately they propose that the government confiscate money from us workers and put it in the hands of businesses, allegedly to create jobs. That's the financial incentive part. And at the same time, he proposes to strip employers of their obligation to pay unemployment insurance premiums, in effect what they do by paying the unemployment compensation tax at a very low rate here in Pennsylvania, is paying unemployment compensation premiums. So I would assume that Mitt would stand for the idea that as soon as you cut out the existing program, that everybody would automatically, as a matter of law, be entitled to a raise that would at least be equivalent to the amount of money that employers presently pay for unemployment insurance.
No. I can guarantee you that wouldn't be on his
well, plan. I'm shocked. If you guarantee me that wouldn't happen, I'm thunderstruck. After all, these are the same guys that attacked Obama 2 years ago, claiming that he was advocating a redistribution of wealth. And this sounds to me like a fundamental redistribution of wealth. We're going to take it from the poor and give it to the rich.
Well, that's good, isn't it? It's going to create jobs. I mean, if you believe their theory, by doing that, you know, we're going to make the people at the bottom a little more resilient and toughen them up, and you know, they can then take those.
Oh, it's a work hardening program, eh?
There you go.
Well, you know, we learned our lesson. We should have learned our lesson. The Bush tax cuts, which have been in effect every minute of every day of every month of every year of this wildly out-of-control recession, those Bush tax cuts have been in effect. And they not only haven't created any jobs, those subsidies to the business world, those subsidies to the rich people, those subsidies that were just reenacted again today by none other than the United States Senate, have cost us jobs. They've cost us tons of jobs, and they've cost us the infrastructure of this country. They've cost us highway maintenance. They've cost us bridge maintenance. They've cost us road maintenance. They've cost us rebuilding our schools, rebuilding our city halls, rebuilding our communities. They've cost us having a decent rail transportation system, all in the name of making sure that the richest people, the wealthiest 2% of the people that live in this country, get a lion's share over 95% of the tax breaks.
That's the way it should be in conservative world. I mean,
well, that's not conservative. That's radical, Rick. They may call themselves conservative, but that is a radical, wild, out-of-control redistribution of wealth in this country, stealing from the poor, giving to the rich. The only other time in my lifetime that I've seen such an extraordinary transfer of wealth has been the people in the United States transferring all their money over to the Arab countries in exchange for some oil.
Yep. Yeah, or to the Chinese for cheap plastic crap at Walmart.
Yeah, true enough.
Yeah, why do we put up with it? I mean, the question I have for people, why do we put up with it? Why is this guy even being considered? Not being the front runner. Why is he even being considered for the 2012 presidential nomination? I can't figure that out.
Well, his girlfriend and agent provocateur, Sarah Palin, described the WikiLeaker guy as being un-American. Of course, he's not an American, so he is un-American. But maybe, just maybe, Mitt Romney's proposal is un-American. And maybe Sarah Palin will be the one to point that out.
Oh, that'll happen. Because sometimes I wake up and I read these stories. And look, I understand that here in the state of Pennsylvania, we almost do have accounts because we pay for them. As working people, I pay on every dime that I earn into the unemployment system. So in essence, I've got almost what he's talking about.
Well, it's worse than that. You have the worst of both possible worlds when you live here in Pennsylvania. Working people in this state pay on every penny they earned, as you just said. They pay unemployment insurance premiums to the state of Pennsylvania on every penny they earn. Employers, on the other hand, in this state, pay on about 19% of the statewide average annual wage, pay on only $8,000 a year. Shockingly, employers pay on the same $8,000 a year today that they paid in 1986. In 1986, that was about 50% of the statewide average wage. Today, it's about 19%. So they've gotten, in the past 24, 25 years, an approximately 60% across-the-board tax cut, a tax slash, by not paying even on what they had agreed in 1986 was a fair share.
But, Irwin, I thought Pennsylvania had the highest tax rates in the country.
I don't know on what. I mean, that's another one of those great urban myths. Pennsylvania has breathtakingly low taxes, for business. I mean, we have a capital stock franchise tax. Nobody pays it. We have a corporate net income tax. Nobody pays it. It's only applicable to corporations organized in Pennsylvania. All the big guys are organized in Delaware, so they evade those taxes. And, of course, we have a personal income tax that's 3.6%. It's as low as it gets in the United States. And then, of course, we have our unemployment tax. Our unemployment tax applies only to the first $8,000 of wages on the part of employers, but it applies to every penny that every worker gets. Every time a worker successfully gets a pay raise, every time they increase the minimum wage as a matter of law, workers' unemployment insurance taxes go up, 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 up. As a matter of fact, if you really peel the onion, the difference between the tax being paid by employers on 50% of the statewide average wage in 1986 and only 19% in 2010 of the statewide average wage, if that would have just kept pace with inflation and still be 50% today, Pennsylvania wouldn't have the $3.2 billion debt to the federal government from its unemployment compensation trust fund. It would have a surplus, and nobody's benefits would be in danger. Nobody's tax rates would be going up. Nobody would have a complaint. But this is, and I've mentioned this before to you, I think, and others, that this is a contrived crisis, that the same people who want to confiscate our money to support their business escapades and call it job creation are the ones who contrived this crisis on unemployment compensation, and now their advocate, Mitt Romney, is suggesting that we privatize the whole thing. It was interesting to hear, by the way, that he didn't suggest in his privatization proposal that working people then should be able to determine eligibility for unemployment insurance benefits or the amount of benefits or the duration of benefits. That, I guess, would stay in the hands of his Republican cronies. And, of course, he didn't suggest the one other thing, and that is that if the unemployment compensation system that he proposes goes bankrupt, I assume he'd advocate a bailout just the same way he advocated a bailout for the other insurance companies, like AIG, when they stole our money and ran away.
I don't know about that. You know, the more if you're talking about working people here, I think he would let those insurance companies go belly up, and all the people who would be collecting the unemployment, they would just have to suffer. That's how I see that going. Maybe you've got it right and I've got it wrong, but that's how I see it going.
Well, I just have to assume. I mean, this guy is the advocate, the passionate advocate of what he refers to as capitalism, and his capitalism is stealing from the poor and to the rich. So the poor are poor, those who go bankrupt, and when this unemployment insurance system that he proposes goes bankrupt, I assume that we'd get a bailout the same way as his AIG pals got a bailout.
Well, at least I would hope that would be the case. But
what's fair is fair.
I still don't buy it. Here's the thing, and I agree with your assessment of this being a contrived crisis, that this is something they caused, because now that we are in this crisis, you can have polling like we saw today come out of Quinnipiac, which said Pennsylvanians are all in favor, sell the state stores, sell off the wine and spirits.
Well, that's not what it said.
But that's how it's being spun.
Well, I don't know how it's being spun. I can't speak for the spinmeisters, but like everybody, I look at the polls not merely for what the headline says, but what the question was. And the question was posed, and it was posed in a fashion to elicit a specific response. The question was posed, do you support selling the state stores to balance the Pennsylvania budget? Okay. In that question, there's a whole bunch of assumptions. It's kind of like, do you still beat your wife? You know, there's an assumption that if you sold the state stores, you would balance the budget. Well, never before have I heard a more specious assumption. If the question was posed, would you support selling the state stores and immediately deny the Pennsylvania Treasury $500 million a year? How many people do you think would be saying that yes to that? Because that's what it means. That's what it means.
Yeah, I don't know many people would be in favor of that. And I think that's why I brought it up, for one, because I think people need to know what's underneath the headlines.
Yeah.
And the question I point out was skewed. It is your basic push pull saying, you know, giving you one really bad option and here's the easy way out. Take this.
Well, you know, we have all kinds of easy way outs. One other easy way out is to have people who are making money off the backs of Pennsylvania workers and off the backs of Pennsylvania's children and out of the heart and soul of Pennsylvania's environment to pay their fair share. Okay? Pennsylvania's environment is being strafed in the north central part of the state through this Marcellus shale game. But we're not taxing that.
And I think we should be. I absolutely think we should be taxing that.
Well, I got a better one for you. If the state doesn't want to raise taxes or impose taxes, as Governor-elect Corbett suggests, maybe he should go and negotiate a deal with all these gas companies that they give the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and all its political subdivisions, all its school districts, free gas forever. Instead of having a tax.
There's an interesting idea.
Let's have some of the wealth of the land on which we sit go back to us taxpayers, us people, we citizens.
Do you think there's much chance of Corbett closing the Delaware loophole? Because I don't know that is really a tax increase. I think it's just making people pay what it's enforcing the tax laws that are currently on the books. I think that would be a good start.
I think it would be a wonderful start. But the last thing anybody would accuse me of is having capacity to speak for the incoming Corbett administration. You may have missed it, but in those 400 people that were named,
you weren't one
on the various transition committees.
Gotcha.
I wasn't on the list.
Gotcha.
Even though I've been involved in a number of these issues for nearly four decades, I wasn't on the list. Even though I represent the largest single institution that exists in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania as their general counsel and have for quite some time, I wasn't on the list.
Maybe next time.
Maybe next time. It's, you know, you look at the list of the people who are on the education transition subcommittee, and they're all people who are education privatizers. And you look at the people on the banking transition team, and they're all bankers. No borrowers, no users, no regulators, just bankers. So somehow or another, guys like you and me, we missed the A-list, huh?
Yeah, I know my invitation, my Tom Corbett prize was not in my mailbox today.
Yeah. Maybe look in the next box of Cracker Jack, if we can afford to buy one.
Irwin, always great to talk with you. I appreciate your time, buddy.
Thanks. Good to hear your voice. Give that guy Jake sitting near you my best, and great stuff. See you soon. Talk to you next week, just before Christmas.
All righty. Thank you so much, Irwin.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
America's leaders can't seem to get a grip on the stands. the White House, Congress, the Pentagon, and assorted war hawks keep insisting that our soldiers and billions of our tax dollars must stay committed to defeating the Taliban in Afghanistan and creating a stable Afghan government with a strong army to keep the Taliban down. Luckily, they say, the government of neighboring Pakistan is our ally in this noble cause. Indeed, our whole war strategy depends on our Pakistani friends helping us defeat Taliban forces in their own country, thus weakening them next door. If it all comes together, Afghanistan will flourish as an independent force in the region. In summary, to build up Afghanistan, we need Pakistan to tear down the Taliban. Get it? Neither do our leaders. It seems that Pakistan is not really helping us, despite our constant pleas and threats. Why? Because there's a fundamental flaw in our leaders' assumptions. Pakistan, you see, doesn't hate, fear, or really want to get rid of Taliban in either country. Pakistan's real concern is with its powerful, antagonistic, and aggressive neighbor on its eastern border, India. In fact, Pakistanis see a strong Taliban in Afghanistan as a check on the possibility that India would establish a stronghold there, thus threatening Pakistan from the west and east. Not only does Pakistan see the Taliban as a useful ally, but Pakistani intelligence agencies helped the Afghan Taliban rise to power in the first place. This is Jim Hightower saying, yes, this is a convoluted mess. But in essence, it comes down to this. Pakistan's national security interests in Afghanistan are in direct contradiction to ours. So the real question is not why Pakistan won't do more to help us, but why the hell are our war leaders putting American troops on the line for a strategy that can't work?
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Where common sense, reason, and community come together. The Rick Smith Show.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Also, starting this Saturday, we'll be doing our Hungry and Homeless for the Holidays event. We'll be living in the giant parking lot there at 255 South Spring Garden Street in Carlisle, collecting food for Project Share and some cash donations for Project Share and Carlisle Cares, the emergency homeless shelter. We'll be doing that for the entire week, starting Saturday, ending Christmas Eve at noon. So we'll hope you come out and say hello. If you want to argue, you want to talk politics, any of that, I'm all in favor, but you're going to have to drop a couple of coins in the box. Sorry, my time is valuable. We got a lot of work to do. So we're going to kick off the new year right and help the folks who need it the most by, you know, hopefully we fill the truck up. And I want to thank ABF Freight for allowing us to have a trailer. That's a good thing. It's going to help us. Bigger trailer, more food, great stuff. So hope you come out and say hello. I don't know if you saw this afternoon. Overwhelmingly, the Senate approved the Bush tax handouts, along with the rest of the compromise. The vote was 81-19. 81-19. You had 5 Republicans, 13 Democrats, and, of course, Bernie. Who voted against it. The Republicans were Voinovich from Ohio, Sessions from Alabama, DeMint from South Carolina, Ensign from Nevada, and that's it. Those are the 5, right? Yeah. So 5 Republicans, 13 Democrats, and, of course, our friend Bernie. And, you know, it's going to go to the House. Nancy Pelosi and a couple other people, Chris Van Hollen of Maryland, have said it's going to be a tough row, especially with the estate tax situation being what it is. Again, you know, there's so much here for me. There's so much to not be thrilled with that I personally, if I were voting, I think I would vote against it.
Well, the irony is, the conservatives who we disagree with most of the time, some of them are saying they're simply not going to vote for it because it adds too much to the deficit, and I tend to agree with them on that point.
Look, I mean, if we're in as bad economic shape as they tell us we are, and I think we are, handing all this money out, I'm sorry, just is not the way to have a balanced fiscal house. For me, the people who have all this disposable wealth, they're not spending it here. This money that we're going to give them, they're not going to invest here. They haven't proven that they will. As Irwin said in the last segment, those tax cuts have been in place since 2001. We have been handing the very wealthiest people in this country as much money as they could have for all these years, and yet they still have not created one job.
Well, and the thing that, when you think about it, the thing that might be most troubling of all, it has probably gotten the least publicity, Rick, is this Social Security thing, reducing the tax on it. That might be a problem in the future, and that at a time right now, the Social Security Fund does not need another shortfall. That's troubling.
That is a Republican wet dream right there. You gave them everything they wanted, and that too. It's like my wife took my daughter to an ice cream place. And, she got, for my daughter and her, she got the big 5-scoop ice cream. And it was sitting in front of my 2-year-old. And she just had the biggest grin out of her face. And she had whipped cream all over and chocolate bits and all this stuff all over. Just the biggest smile in the world. And that's how I think the Republicans feel. Like they have just dipped their face into the biggest bowl of ice cream with the most whipped cream and the cherries and everything. And they're just thrilled to death. And they couldn't be happier. It doesn't get any better than that for them. They got what they wanted on the estate tax. They got what they wanted to hand out to the top 2%. And they get to destroy Social Security, get to put that one more jab in there. Oh, man.
Plus, on top of that, if you're worried about Social Security, this $800,000, some people think it's as much as a million, is going to add to the deficit. That's going to make it that easier for the Republicans to attack Social Security, even beyond that. So, when I started adding them up, Rick, I saw one positive, and that was, yes, you're going to give Social Security insurance to about 2 million unemployed, but I counted at least 6 negatives, and it could have been done in a better fashion. I still think he's really punting way too early, way too early. I used the analogy, he's punting on third down. It might have even been worse, and he might have been punting on second down. I think he had time to really try to use the bully pulpit, and beyond that. If the Democrats can't win this issue, damn it, what can they win? If you can't go to the American people and say this is absolutely wrong, this is where we stand. If the Democrats cannot win that issue, what issue can they win it?
Well, I think Strickland said it best. If we can't win this, we fold up our tents and we go home. And I don't know that I don't disagree with him. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back with Lee Fong from the Center for American Progress. Stick around.
Ripples of tears, I see them blue.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
If you or a loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free book by Calhoun Associates by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of the 7 Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 717-695-4722.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Fillman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, But AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make headway.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Show 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Last night I talked about Alan West. He's the recently elected teabag candidate down there in Florida. And like I said last night, he said that we should be, I guess this was his idea of a statement, we should be censoring all of these people who reported on the WikiLeaks story. I guess he didn't read that first line of the document that they so love to talk about. Well, today he kind of backpedaled and said, well, I didn't mean censure in that way. I meant just to harshly criticize them, you know, to criticize them. Yeah. I got the guy who broke the story on the phone. I got Lee Fong here from the Center for American Progress. Lee, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rick.
You know, I'm looking at this guy and I'm going, I think you absolutely meant go after them and censor what they're writing.
Well, you know, if you listen to the audio, if you listen to it clearly, you know, he certainly says censor all media, and that any media that's been covering WikiLeaks has been aiding and abetting a serious crime. But if you look at his history, Alan West thinks basically every single Muslim in America is a criminal, and that the Muslim religion is an ideology of terrorism. I mean, these are extreme views. Not only does he not understand the First Amendment, which guarantees the right of a free press, but he doesn't even understand the founder's vision for America. I mean, we were founded on, you know, religious tolerance, and he's one of the most outright explicit religious bigots, I think, in Congress now.
I mean, I got to be honest, the more I read about this guy, the more I look at him, the scarier he becomes.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, a lot of people have focused on, you know, one or two small aspects of his biography, but this is a guy who actually was dismissed from the military for torturing an Iraqi civilian. He put a gun to the guy's head and pretended to shoot it, and then also mocked another execution of a fellow in a really just gruesome way. And it's astounding to, I think, the media. I mean, he was on Meet the Press just a few weeks ago, and they're treating him with the utmost respect, but they don't actually report what this guy has been saying and what he's been doing his entire career.
But isn't that, I mean, for some people, and there are some people that I know here in central Pennsylvania who think he's just, you know, he's a great American hero, and he's, you know, he's saying the things that average Americans are thinking, and I'm going, well, if that is, I must not be an average American, because I think the guy's a kook.
Well, you know, I appreciate people who actually speak their mind and are honest, because too many politicians are out there speaking politician talk, you know, speaking out of both sides of their mouth and coming up with, you know, the latest Frank Luntz lobbying firm talking points whenever they talk about any issue of public importance. But at the end of the day, this guy is far out of the mainstream. He wants to privatize Social Security. He wants to get rid of Medicare. He doesn't want the Department of Education. Across the board, you know, he might shoot from the hip and say what's on his mind, but what's on his mind isn't good for America.
I agree. And, you know, one of the things I find odd is that he comes from a military background. It's my understanding. You know, people I know who've been in the military tell me it's fairly a socialist organization. Everybody gets health care. Everybody gets a pension. Everybody makes a reasonable wage. Those are things that I think that we should be, as a society, promoting instead of some of the things that he's talking about.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, a lot of these Republican members of Congress are talking about repealing health reform, particularly Tea Party members like him. But you have to look at their background. several of them who are veterans, they benefit from VA care, which is basically single payer. There isn't even an insurance middleman. You go directly to a government-owned hospital. As several other quote-unquote insurgent Tea Party Republicans are actually former Republican state senators and state representatives who are still benefiting from their government health care plan that's going to take care of them and their spouse for the rest of their lives, and they've got a great government pension. It's really ludicrous what these guys can say and think they get away with.
Well, and the reality is, and this is one of the things that I found interesting, most of the time they get away with it. There are very few organizations like Think Progress who are out there keeping tabs on this stuff. The right-wing media machine is so large and so well-funded that they feel very secure where they're at, and they don't think that there are many people looking over their shoulders. And I got to give you guys the credit to find this, because he said it on an internet radio show, on a very conservative internet radio show. How did you find it, I guess, would be my first question.
Well, unfortunately for my social life, you know, I spent a lot of time listening to internet radio and, you know, reading conservative websites, because although we like to criticize some of these really out of the mainstream conservatives for having extreme beliefs, they are very good at getting their message out. They're out there talking on radio shows. They're giving speeches. They're organizing rallies. They don't come up with good policy plans, but they're very good at getting their message out there. So, you know, my colleagues and I, there are about seven other Think Progress bloggers. That's what we do. We try to keep track of this, keep them honest, do the reporting that the mainstream media isn't doing.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because I've always said that the right Republicans and you know, some corporate Democrats, they're very good at messaging. They're very good at sloganeering. They're very good at politics. Not so good at governing.
No, I think we'll see a great example of that in the next 2 years. You know, the New York Times, actually, a day after the election last month, had a great article, and just coming to mind now, how Republicans, right after they lost the election in 2008, they had a retreat, and there was a presentation, and one of the slides said the goal of the minority is to get into the majority. And the presentation basically said, we shouldn't come up with any policy plans. We just figure out the best messages, the best attacks to undermine Obama. And, you know, to their credit, they did it very well. Yeah. They won a historic election. But that type of strategy of just throwing bombs and making up names and saying really nasty things about your political opponents, that doesn't give people health care. You know, it doesn't get jobs. It doesn't revitalize the nation. So I think we'll have a very different political dynamic in the next 2 years as they take over the Congress.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see as we move forward, because it doesn't create jobs to put the unemployed back to work either. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Lee Fong from the Center for American Progress. AmericanProgress.org is their website. You know, one of the other things you did that I happened to see over at the Think Progress blog was you went to the Annenberg Policy Center's factcheck.org cash attack 2010 discussion recently. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's interesting that you brought this up, because we saw all these political ads during the during this last election, and there were millions of dollars spent on mostly attack ads. There were very few positive ads that threw out all kinds of wild claims. And I thought it was interesting that when you confronted one of the people, they really had no defense and really nothing to say, and it was just moved on. They didn't actually make the guy respond.
Yeah, that's the sad thing for Annenberg. They didn't press the guy on any of these issues. But, you know, just this ad, one of the first shots that this group, this quote-unquote think tank, made was this ad showing Patty Murray, who's the, you know, she ran for Congress the very first time, saying she's going to be a mom wearing tennis shoes. It was kind of a folksy thing. But they showed an ad of a woman, supposedly Patty Murray, wearing tennis shoes, walking through the mud, and then literally stomping on children, stepping over their backs. And they said, you know, Patty Murray has been stepping on us, you know, let's get her out of Congress, something to that effect. And when I saw that ad earlier this year, I looked at the ad fact check, because when groups put out ads, they sometimes put, you know, here are the votes that justify our claims in this ad. And one of the votes that was supposedly justifying the claim that she was stepping on children
was her vote to pass SCHIP, which was an expansion of health insurance for low-income children to the effect of 4 million children, and it was basically funded through a 30-cent tax on cigarettes. Very reasonable piece of legislation, and certainly I just don't understand how that's stepping on the backs of children. So when I asked this think tank, you know, could you justify how supporting health insurance for children is akin to stepping on the backs of children, they were just flabbergasted. They said, you know, well, we want, you know, opportunity, and, you know, some kind of, they mumbled some answer, but it wasn't coherent at all.
He fell back on a platitude. He fell back on, well, you know, government's bad when it gets too big, and we want freedom. Freedom! That was basically his response, was falling back on slogans. And I guess, you know, you look at these think tanks, very few people actually go out and question them when they have their little discussion groups. And when they do, and they do have someone like you who steps up and asks a question, they quickly, they summarily dismiss you.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, no one else asked a very tough or interesting question during that panel. And kind of ironically, you know, to his credit, this guy Rob Collins, who's this Republican operative who runs this quote-unquote think tank, was very nice. But at the end, he said, you know, I've got to go. I've got to take care of my kids. And it just kind of struck me. You know, he runs a $70 million attack think tank, and I'm sure he's paid very well. He's paid the founder of Home Depot and several other corporate and Wall Street firms fund his think tank. You know, I'm sure his kids have health insurance. I'm sure they don't have to worry about these kinds of issues. And he's totally disconnected from the actual policy debates he's running ads about. I don't think he has to worry about taking care of his kids' pre-existing condition or making sure they can afford college. And it's really unnerving that there's such a schism between the people making the ads and the actual people living under these policies and living under these politics in the rest of the country.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that catches my attention. And I've heard people, you know, say about politicians in Washington, well, that if they had to see how I live, they would think differently. And I think the same thing for these people who live in these little bubbles.
It's worse for the consultant world because they all live in Georgetown and these nice areas of D.C. and it's a total cocoon. They make these nasty ads. They get paid $100,000 a pop for some of these, and they have a good time. They don't care about what's happening in the rest of the world.
So, Lee, how do we combat that? I mean, I looked at these attack ads when they were coming up, going, personally, I'm sitting there going, how can anybody believe this stuff on either side of the coin? Anytime you're negative, that means you have nothing better, in my mind, nothing better to say. How do we combat this? How do we educate people for the next time? Because I got to tell you, in 2 years, I think it's going to be much worse than it was this time around.
You're absolutely right. At this event, actually, they said this was a testing run for 2012. We're going to start airing ads early in 2011 to frame up the debate in 2012, and we're going to have much more money. So, you know, if your imagination can just run wild with that. And it works to a degree. People, they did polls right before this midterm elections. Literally, only like 3 or 4% of Americans, Democrat and Republican, knew that Obama passed one of the largest middle-class tax cuts in recent history. They didn't have the information. Even though they received the tax cut in their paycheck, they didn't know because they saw these ads. You know, in some places they were running every other commercial for months. Yeah. Saying that Obama raised your taxes, even though it wasn't true.
Well, to me, that said two things. One, whoever's when they're collecting their paychecks, they're really not looking at them. And two, again, Democrats are bad at politics. Bush gave out, you know, he gave out a check, and he sent a letter beforehand saying, hey, your check's coming, look for it. The most inefficient way of getting it to you, but it made a political point. Obama did the opposite, the more efficient way, but not the politic way, and he got burned for it.
Well, some people were, and I count myself included in this, excited to have a professor and kind of academic in chief because he would possibly be more thoughtful and obviously more competent than our last president. But the same token, you're absolutely right. He's terrible at politics.
Yeah, that's just what it is. Lee Fong from the Center for American Progress, I appreciate your time. Keep up the great work, and I'd love to have you back again real soon.
Rick, thanks for having me, and have a good day.
You too. We're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-5225. 7425. We'll be right back after this.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
AFSCME President Gerald McEntee says false and absurd statements attacking public workers as a privileged class are being incessantly repeated by right-wing media. That attack campaign, even falsely blaming public employees for the economic crisis, is being echoed by right-wing talk shows and conservative Republican politicians. AFSCME is defending public employees and their families from this assault with a Stop the Lies campaign. McEntee says by blaming public workers, the right wing is trying to divert attention away from the real privileged class on Wall Street and their reckless behaviors that enriched them while plunging the rest of us into a financial crisis. For more information on the Stop the Lies campaign, go to AFSCME.org/stop the lies. Rite Aid drugstore workers are leafleting dozens of Rite Aid stores nationwide in a national day of action today to call attention to what the UFCW's Bill Epstein calls the company's culture of corporate greed. Epstein says Rite Aid workers are defending themselves from an assault on their living standards and job rights.
It's ironic that at a time when corporate profits are at a record high, unemployment is also at a record high. There's no question that the way this economy has been treating working men and women has been a disaster. If you see union members outside of Rite Aid's today, please take their flyers and give them to the store manager or to workers inside the store and ask them to pass it along to their corporate headquarters. You can visit Facebook and Twitter and pick up a message there and send it to Rite Aid corporate headquarters.
In a time when airlines are gutting unions and employee contracts, workers at Alaska Airlines came out on top. Jesse Russell reports.
The new proposed contract between Alaska Airlines and its clerical office and passenger service employees, represented by the International Association of Machinists, is likely to be approved by members based on the quality of the contract. The new three-year contract will see a $1,500 signing bonus, raises, expanded job security protections, and entry into the airline's performance-based pay annual incentive plan. On top of that, workers won't see increases in health care costs. The contract also offers some workers the option of telecommuting if they can perform their work at home. In a statement, Alaska Airlines Vice President of Human Resources and Labor Relations, Kelly Dobbs, said the agreement reflects the outstanding customer service efforts of employees. The two sides have been in negotiation since March of 2010.
700 was the unlucky number on Tuesday. News leaked early in the day that internet search engine Yahoo could be laying off between 600 and 700 employees. This would be the fourth layoff in 3 years for the company and would amount to a workforce cut of 5%. Northern Indiana, already struggling with a high unemployment rate, was also hit with some bad news as TJX Company announced it would be shuttering a distribution center for its discount chain, AJ Wright. If that plan moves forward, 700 employees at the center will start receiving pink slips in February. This newscast made possible in part by the American Federation of Teachers, a union of professionals.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Also, hungryandhomeless.org. If you've got a couple of bucks that you want to send to Project Share or to Carlisle Cares, it is tax deductible right there. So that would be a great thing to do during the holiday season. John Thune, Republican from South Dakota, he was on IMUS's program talking about the Republican obstructionism and the fact that they have blocked the James Agota 9/11 Health and Compensation Act. And, you know, they had no problem saying, you know, we're going to block this. We have no problem doing that. But we need to have that money for the rich people. And IMUS asked the guy, he says, you know, it seems to me, it seems to others, that if we're going to help anybody, we would certainly help these people, these Americans who were the first responders to 9/11. And Thune had an interesting response.
Right. And the difference, I think, with the tax bill is there is a deadline, January 1st. We have to get this done. Taxes go up on January 1st. That's a matter of law. We need to get the issue addressed for the firefighters and the 911 victims, and we will. But again, there's a right way and a wrong way to do this, and there's a way in which you can pay for these things and try and get this thing to where it doesn't cost quite as much, where it doesn't provide as much exposure and as much liability. There are some things in this bill that we think can be improved upon. We need an opportunity to do that. They want to rush all these things through at the end of the year without debate, without amendments, and without the opportunity to go through a normal process. And I think that we can do that. We can do many of these last-minute initiatives they're trying to push through. We can do them next year.
Yeah. And, you know, here's the thing. How long do these folks have to wait? One, how long do they have to wait? If we can't wait to give the upper 1%, upper 2% their tax handouts, these people who are suffering, who have health problems because of what they did for the country, they can wait, evidently, according to our Republican friend. But, you know, the very wealthy, you know, the ones who, the John McCains of the world who have seven homes, or the Paris Hiltons who have homes all over the world, they need it now. You know, that they need it right now. But those are those people that we call heroes. Remember them? The people who rushed into the building, the people who worked on that smoldering pile of asbestos and cement dust and flame and all of that, the folks who risked their lives to rescue their fellow citizens and to recover the people who didn't make, they have to wait, evidently. And I love the way he goes into, he says, well, you know, we can do it in a way where we don't have to provide that much exposure, that much liability. I'm sorry. I thought taking care of people meant taking care of people. These folks who came to our aid, we should, as a matter of basic decency, be there to help them in their hour of need. And it's, to me, just another one of these things. If you remember after 9/11, the Giulianis of the world wrapped themselves around 9/11. Bush wrapped himself around it. And here we are, 9 years later. 9 years later. And we still haven't done the right thing by those folks. Utterly, utterly disgusting. Amazing stuff. But you know who we can help? You know who we can help? The wealth class. We got them their big tax handouts, and you see the story from Bloomberg today. Goldman Sachs Group Incorporated Chief Executive Officer Lloyd Blankenfein and his top deputies will collect $111.3 million in stock next month in a delayed payoff from last year and their record-setting 2007 bonuses. So he's going to get, in January, another $24.3 million. Good for him. His number two there, the president, Gary Cohn, he's going to get another $24 billion. Good for him. And as a corporation, Goldman Sachs has set aside $13.1 billion to cover their compensation. It's about $375,000 for each one of their employees. So, you know, they're not hurting. And what we've seen is we've seen record profits all across the board. Wall Street's back. Wall Street's happy, fat and happy. But yet we're still talking about almost close to a 10% unemployment rate in this country. So where are the jobs? Wall Street's back. Corporate America had the best quarter in the third quarter in the history of the country. We gave the tax. We're going to give them their money. We've been held hostage. You know, the bank robbers, they're going to get their take. Where are the jobs? That's all I want to know. Where are the jobs?
You tell me, right?
Well, they don't need it. What they've done is they've done a sufficient job in scaring the hell out of each and every working person so that they're working harder for less. They're willing to give up more. They're willing to do more for less. And you know what? There's profit to be made. Productivity has gone up. Profits have gone up. Yeah, the Christmas is going to be great for the Wall Street executives. People like you and me, not so good, especially folks who shop at Walmart, because, as Bloomberg points out, Walmart has sent out emails to their store managers with instructions on marking up an average of 1,800 types of toys per store this holiday season. It was dated November 30th, because they want to keep up with, you know, with profits. They write, Walmart Stores Incorporated, the largest retailer in the country, in the world, raised prices on hundreds of toys this month, squeezing more out of sales during the biggest shopping period of the year. Walmart managers in the U.S. received instructions to mark up an average of 1,800 types of toys per store. This email was obtained by, according to a company email that they obtained from Bloomberg News. The email didn't disclose which toys were to be increased, but prices were changed to better enable your store and the company to have a successful financial month. Now, understand, you've got 3,800 stores in the country. They're going to jump those costs up. And who bears those costs? You and I. You remember the slogan, lower prices, live better, or live better, lower prices, or whatever it is? Not so low anymore. In fact, they're figuring out a way of sticking it to us all the time. So what are we going to do about it? The answer is not much. I mean, I have not heard much outrage. Most of the people I talk to are thrilled. We're going to Walmart. Hoo-hoo! And it's not just Walmart. It's all of them. It's all of the big box retailers. It's this whole ball of wax, because they got us. They have sufficiently killed off all of the real competition. All the mom and pops are gone. All the small. I think about my grandmother, her working career. She was a cashier at a place called Uncle Bill's in Cleveland. It was a small department store, smaller than Kmart. Kind of like on the Clover model that they used to have here. What other kind of, you know what I'm talking about? What was around here? What was a small kind of department store around here?
Well, not Walgreens. That's it. No, that's not a department store.
Anyway, it's a small department store, and that created jobs for a bunch of people in that place. My grandmother in 1885, she made $8 an hour with 6 weeks vacation, full health benefits, full dental, you name it. Paid vacation, paid holidays, paid sick days. That was a very profitable little store. And then Walmart came to town and destroyed all of that. And that's what's happened. All of these little places, all of these small competitive mom and pops that used to have alternative products, you know, products that you needed, usually made here in the U.S., all gone.
There used to be a Kresge's.
Kresge's. There's a perfect example. Another one. But here again, this idea of cutthroat capitalism, this has destroyed the America that I grew up in. There's nothing local anymore. We live in a very homogenous nation where I can go from city to city to city and I can find the same restaurant chains and I can find the same grocery chains and I can find the same big box retailers.
Exactly what you're talking about, Rick, about 5 years ago, the area I lived. Walmart came in and it was, you know, the typical. They got X number of years tax deferred, and they came in. Within about 3 years, they put out about four stores, and they were all generational. And they were small, and they were family-controlled, and literally some of them were in business over 100 years. How are you going to compete? You cannot compete. And you ask, well, I thought there were antitrust laws, too. To prevent this,
you
got to
have someone who's willing to
enforce them. The big eating the small and just eating, devouring the small and getting bigger and bigger and bigger. No competition, no federal government intervention. those businesses are out forever. You have situation after situation in this country where Walmart did that. Oh, and then 5 years down the road, they moved out and went to another community and did the same thing.
Well, what's interesting is the story of Walmart. I mean, their rise was on the backs of their workforce. They have been notorious for cheating their employees out of wages, for having them work off the clock, for having them do a lot of the things that they've been sued for over the years. That's how they made their position. And along the way, we didn't have sufficient law to hold them in check. We didn't have people willing to hold them in check. I mean, the antitrust laws are there. They're there. It's just nobody's in.
Well, it's even more insidious. You have people who used to work for Walmart, who were either fired or they just got tired of what they were asked to do, and they went public and they worked against Walmart. And there's testimony that middle management would go into, they would prep prior to going in community, and they would check it out, they would do their studies, and they would literally go through communities and they would make bets. They would look at competing small companies, small businesses. They would literally kind of make fun, you know, a game of it. Well, it'll take us 6 months to get that one out, but this one a year and a half, this one two, and they would make bets on it.
Yeah.
That's how cynical these people are. I mean, that's just the antithesis to what America is supposed to be about. The great American dream, it used to be that you build a business and you employ people, and that's the American dream, and it's going by the wayside. And somehow, like you said, and that's what's so insidious, we almost seem powerless to stop it.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. What do you think this holiday season? What should we be doing? We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after that.
We want the world and we want it now. We're going to take it anyhow. We want the hellwind.
Not right wing. Just right. The Rick Smith Show.
If you were injured at work, do you think you would need an attorney? You probably don't. To protect yourself, you do need to know your rights. Retain control. Order your free book, The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case, by visiting workinjuryinpa.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Order your free book, The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case, by visiting workinjuryinpa.com or calling 695-4722.
Old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one? Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211. You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well? Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211. How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave? Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211. Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike. Call him at 243-3211. You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too. So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211. Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings. That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. News Corp's Mark Howard writes, yet another study has been released proving that watching Fox News is detrimental to your intelligence. World Public Opinion, a project managed by the Program on International Policy Attitudes at the University of Maryland conducted a survey of American voters that show that Fox News viewers are significantly more misinformed than consumers of other news sources. What's more, the study shows that greater exposure to fake news on Fox increases misinformation. So the more you watch, the less you know. Or to be precise, the more you think you know that is actually false. The study corroborates a previous PIPA study that focused on the Iraq War with similar results. And there was an NBC Washington or Wall Street Journal poll that demonstrated the break with reality on the part of Fox viewers with regard to health care. The body of evidence that Fox News is nothing but a propaganda machine dedicated to lies is growing by the day. In 8 of the 9 questions, Fox News placed first in the percentage of those who were misinformed. They placed second on the question of TARP. That's pretty high batting average for a journalistic fraud, he writes. There is a list of what fraud, what Fox News viewers believe that just ain't so. 91% believe that the stimulus legislation lost jobs. Now, we know that isn't true. 72% of Fox viewers believe that health reform law will increase the deficit. We know that's not true. 72% of Fox viewers believe the economy is going to get worse and the sky's falling. 60% believe climate change is not occurring. 49% believe the income taxes have gone up. 63% believe the stimulus legislation did not include any tax cuts. 56% believe Obama initiated the GM Chrysler bailout. 38% of Fox viewers believe that most Republicans oppose TARP, which we know that's not true. 63% of Fox viewers believe Obama was not born in the United States. I got to tell you, you know, the more I talk to people who watch religiously, the more I realize that they really don't have a grasp of the issues. And look, I'll have an honest debate with anybody. In fact, I love discussing issues and policy and people's view of things. But I can almost immediately tell my Fox friends who spew the same platitudes, the same talking points. And then when you go, hey, let's go a little deeper into that. Let's get underneath the skin, talk about it at the secondary level. Then it's a whole different ballgame because there are no talking points for that. You know, death tax. You want the death tax. Yeah, I would like to see a reasonable estate tax because I don't want to have an accumulation of wealth. I think an accumulation of wealth at the very top by a handful of people is dangerous for our democracy. I think it's trouble. But you can't have that discussion. Let's go to the phone lines. I got Ike on line one. How are we doing tonight, Ike?
All right, buddy. How are you?
I'm good.
You know, I believe they're called oligarchs, and that's one of the things that the founding fathers were definitely dead set against.
Absolutely.
They didn't want a royal ruling class, and that's why they set things up the way that they did. As a matter of fact, you know, the Fox News idiots and the drug ad blowhard Rush Limbaugh listeners, you know, they don't understand that the first 150 years we were basically a federal republic. They don't understand that businesses, to have the privilege to be able to do business, had to get a charter.
Yep.
And if they violated that charter, they could be put out of business quite easily.
We had the right to pull their charter. It wasn't
exactly
until Rockefeller and Standard Oil, but that's a whole other argument. That's a whole other discussion.
Yeah. Well, it's similar, you know. But it was basically aimed at the same thing, the concentration of power.
Yep.
Which is actually what the death tax are. Well, that's what they like to coin the phrase death tax, but the inheritance tax thing is all about as well. There's something I keep running into and it keeps blowing me away and I can't figure out where they're getting this from, what is this chatter I keep hearing from these right-wing ditto heads about, Obama spent more money than any president in the history of the United States, and he's got a bigger deficit and bigger spending than George Bush. Can you explain that one to me?
Well, I mean, from the deficits that we picked up from Bush. Now, understand, we had to pay for the Bush tax cuts. So no matter, understand, in 2009, no matter who the president was going to be, we were going to have a $1.2 trillion deficit. That was a runover from the Bush years. No matter what happened, we were going to have that.
Right.
Most folks don't understand that. They think as soon as Bush left office, everything is then Obama's fault. Very linear, very... I mean, really, I talk to people every day who seem to believe that very nothing carries over administration to administration. So no matter who was president, $1.2 trillion was going to be the deficit. Talking about adding to the debt. Now, if you could go back to Reagan borrowed and spent more money than every president up until from the beginning of the country until he was. George W. Bush did the exact same thing, borrowed and spent more money than everybody, including Reagan, up until that point. They're now saying because we had to bail this economy out, that's what he has done. I haven't seen that to be factual yet, but that's what they're trying to push out there, that he's done all this wild spending, when the reality is it has been Republicans' responsibility all along. There have been a couple of years where Democrats added a bit over the last 30 years because Clinton actually balanced the budget the last couple of years. There have been a couple of years Democrats, but for the most part, Republicans are the party of give to the wealthy and borrow and spend.
Sure. I mean, the famous quote from George W., some folks call you the haves and I call you my base.
Yeah.
But, that's what I tell these idiot Republicans when they bring that up. I go, well, you do realize the fiscal budget year of the United States government runs from October to October, and the last budget of the president, whoever he is, expires in the following October once he's out of office. I say, you do know that, don't you? And as a matter of fact, if you run it down, if you run the numbers down, there's only been, one budget submitted by the Obama administration at this point?
Right. Here's the thing, and this is what I ask all of my Republican friends and my Democratic friends, because there are some Democrats that I don't think are worth, a bucket of warm spit either. Name one piece of legislation that a Republican has pushed forward, that a Republican has voted on and a Republican senator president has signed that has helped me, the working person, and only me, the working person, not the top 1%. And people love to throw back, well, minimum wage. No, if you remember, when we passed the minimum wage, we had to give billions of dollars away in business tax credits. There's nothing. They can't find anything because they're not the party of the working people. It's
right,
that simple.
Right.
That simple.
Well, they are hard to deal with and they are hard to talk to. And I have to admit, when I run into one of them, as soon as they get a first sentence out of their mouth, I know whether they're listening to Fox News or watching Fox News, or they're listening to Sean Hannity or Rush Limbaugh or Savage or whatever, I can pretty much tell you who they're getting their information from. The only other question I've got, which I continue to push, is hello, George Soros, and hello, Democratic supporters that have the money. Put your money on the line and let's get out there and do some battles with these people. You got to get in those AM stations. We got a cheap one here in Charleston if you're willing to buy it and put put Rick on the air and put the rest of the crews on the air and, let's go at them 24/7 and do battle, because until you do, they're going to continue to beat the other side like a drum. That's all there is to it.
And you make a very, very cogent point. At some point, we've got to be able to fight back. And, programs like mine, we do, I think, a very good program here, but you could do the best program in the world. If you don't have somewhere to go, you don't have anything. Ike, I appreciate the call, buddy. Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks for your time.
Yep. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Michael Winship from the Writers Guild of America about net neutrality. Programs like this one, we rely on the Internet. We need an open Internet. We're right back after this.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
America's leaders can't seem to get a grip on the stands. The White House, Congress, the Pentagon, and assorted war hawks keep insisting that our soldiers and billions of our tax dollars must stay committed to defeating the Taliban in Afghanistan and creating a stable Afghan government with a strong army to keep the Taliban down. Luckily, they say, the government of neighboring Pakistan is our ally in this noble cause. Indeed, our whole war strategy depends on our Pakistani friends helping us defeat Taliban forces in their own country, thus weakening them next door. If it all comes together, Afghanistan will flourish as an independent force in the region. In summary, to build up Afghanistan, we need Pakistan to tear down the Taliban. Get it? Neither do our leaders. It seems that Pakistan is not really helping us, despite our constant pleas and threats. Why? Because there's a fundamental flaw in our leaders' assumptions. Pakistan, you see, doesn't hate, fear, or really want to get rid of the Taliban in either country. Pakistan's real concern is with its powerful, antagonistic, and aggressive neighbor on its eastern border, India. In fact, Pakistanis see a strong Taliban in Afghanistan as a check on the possibility that India would establish a stronghold there, thus threatening Pakistan from the west and east. Not only does Pakistan see the Taliban as a useful ally, but Pakistani intelligence agencies helped the Afghan Taliban rise to power in the first place. This is Jim Hightower saying, yes, this is a convoluted mess. But in essence, it comes down to this. Pakistan's national security interests in Afghanistan are in direct contradiction to ours. So the real question is not why Pakistan won't do more to help us, but why the hell are our war leaders putting American troops on the line for a strategy that can't work?
To get more Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Demanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show. I got it!
You know, I think back to the old AOL days when I used to have the, you know, the old AOL where you'd hear all that beep, boop, boop, doop, 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 all the noise before you'd maybe get online and maybe you didn't, and it was really slow. I got to be honest, that's my fear. And not just from a personal standpoint, but as a nation, that we're going to have a structure where those who can afford faster internet, they're going to have it. And the folks that can't, well, you can't. And you're going to be out of what they're telling us is the future. Because if you don't have reasonable access to the internet, I think you're going to be out. I think you're going to be out of the future, which is why I'm in favor of net neutrality. I think most people, when they understand the issue, they are on our side. That's why I've asked Michael Winship, he's the president of the Writers Guild of America East, to come on talk to us a bit about their position. Michael, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Rick. It's great to be here.
You know, I look at this issue, and to me, this is a class issue, if there ever was one. They're talking about the very well-to-do, people who can afford the best getting it, and the rest of us, well, not.
Well, we totally agree with that, Rick. And also, you know, for our membership specifically, it's a very important issue because the people who are members of our union are the people who create movies and television and also create original stuff for the Internet. And we want them to be able to have that avenue for their creativity to let other people see their work and to help other people get their work seen.
Well, I mean, to be judged on your content instead of your ability to pay to get the speed out there, the uploads.
That's exactly what we're all about. And, in fact, you know, the major reason that we went on strike for 100 days 3 years ago was to get a foothold in these new media and to allow our members and other people to be able to enjoy freedom.
You know, I look at this, and again, you know, I talk to people who are the Fox News folks, and they're against the idea because, well, you know, it's the marketplace. Competition should dictate. I see having two separate internets as the antithesis of competition.
Well, you know, it goes back to that old principle that the airwaves belong to the public, and we believe that that extends and includes the internet. And this has been a big battleground the last few years between conservatives and progressives. And we feel very strongly that because they are airwaves, they do belong to the public, and everybody should have free and open access to those ways.
See, here again, this is another one of those issues, for me anyway, that I don't see a distinction between progressive conservative, liberal, you know, conservative. I don't see
that. No, you're
should,
right.
I don't want to. Let me explain. Yeah. I don't think there should be a difference, just like in the healthcare debate. Personal responsibility is something that Republicans love to tout, yet they're against the individual mandate making people responsible. This, to me, is open democracy, something that I think everybody is in favor of. So I don't know why we would, because we have split along political lines.
Well, and in fact, you know, exactly what you're talking about, and the Internet gave birth to all these blogs and websites of both the left and right that have given people access to a wider audience, and that's because they've had that freedom to do so.
And again, it comes back down to the content. For people who may not know what net neutrality is, can you give us your definition?
My definition of it is free and open access to the Internet for everybody, regardless of their location, regardless of race, gender, age, or income.
What's going on right now to block that? I mean, I've seen some activity with the FCC where, I'm looking at, these are Obama appointees for the most part. I would hope that they would go along with what our side was hoping for.
Well, we would hope, yeah. I mean, what's happened is that, as you know, the president was very, very strongly on board for this and campaigned very much on a pro-net neutrality platform when he was running for president, and sadly what has happened, as we've seen with so many things with this administration, they've backed off when faced by corporate interests and other pressures, and haven't been as strong as they might be. We've got a chairman of the FCC, Julius Jankowski, who has not been as powerful on this subject as we would like him to be. And what we've wound up with is a vote that's coming up next Tuesday, this coming Tuesday the 14th, on the net neutrality rules, which have been watered down considerably. Now, there's some hope that in between now and then, the FCC commissioners, especially the two FCC commissioners, two Democratic commissioners, rather, Michael Dobbs and Mignon Clyburn, will be working to change those rules to make them tougher before they vote. So what we're asking people to do at this point, last week we were asking people to contact the FCC commissioners directly. This week we're asking people to contact the White House, and we're asking them to do that via our website, which is wgaeast.org/save the internet. And they can also link to it, I believe, on your webpage.
Right. We put a link up on our site at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Michael Winship's name. It'll take you right there, and you can sign up for that. Because I got to be honest, you know, we hear a lot about class warfare. To me, this is one of those class issues. This is the working class, the underclass, if you will, having the same access as their superior, their higher, whatever you want to say.
Sure. And what you can do when you go to the website is that you can just, you know, give us your name and your email address, and you can just sign on to a message that will go right to the White House people who are responsible for this.
Well, let me ask you this, Michael. You know, the FCC is they've kind of softened on this.
Yeah.
And you know, it's not that they're in favor of doing away with net neutrality,
no.
So they say, which to me seems even more dangerous because we really don't know what they're doing.
No, this is the thing. I mean, there are enormous loopholes in this, and one of them is the lack of a clear ban on paid prioritization, which is what prevents these Internet service providers from setting up these fast and slow lanes on the Internet that you were talking about. We have to have some kind of rules on this paid prioritization so that people don't get cut off.
Yeah, I mean, I remember back to the AOL
before I went
to, you know, to something different. I remember how slow everything was.
Mm-hmm. And
eventually, I just kind of gave up and bought the better plan because I could afford
right.
it. But what I worry about, and look, I mean, these are tough economic times. I worry about, this is the access to information. This is the access to jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't, today, most companies don't even take paper applications. You got to do everything online. So this is that. The bus line of my generation. If you
mm-hmm.
didn't live near a bus line, you couldn't get to the decent jobs. I'm saying, in the future, if you can't have decent internet, you're not going to get the jobs of the future.
Well, and the thing, Rick, and that is absolutely crucially important. And the other thing is that every other issue that you talk about on this show, every other thing that is very important to Americans right now in terms of the economy, in terms of jobs, in terms of the war in Afghanistan, everything depends on your ability to access the information on the internet.
Yeah, I mean, I was just talking about a study that was done about Fox News.
Mm-hmm.
The most uninformed, misinformed people watch Fox News.
Right.
It's amazing to me that you still have that many people who claim to know so much that they actually don't know.
Yeah, and it goes back to another issue which is very important to us, which is, you know, totally related to this, which is media consolidation. And this constant, you know, making of these six or seven mega giants in the communication industry who control what you're seeing.
Yeah, you know, and we've talked about this on the program before. You've got six corporations. And if NBC is bought up by Comcast, it will then be five corporations who own or control 80% of everything we see here
or
read.
And it has a devastating effect also on local news, you know, which we already know has been cut back severely.
Oh, there's such a thing as local news?
Yeah, exactly.
I you know, you watch the local news in this area, and it seems like they're all using the same camera crews. And
no,
it's all
I know.
The same shots. It's all,
I know.
That's scary to me.
It's very scary, and you get into situations where people don't get any kind of diverse points of view, and nor is there any reporting that reflects the diversity of the communities.
So what do we do? I mean, how do we fight back on this? I mean, one of the reasons I started this program is because I never hear any alternative to the corporate message. You know, the nice, soft, everything's okay, just do what we say and everything will be fine kind of mentality. And I think most people are buying.
Well, I mean, this is what we've been trying to do via the union. And, you know, I also work for Bill Moyers.
Who I love, by the way.
I'm Bill's senior writer, and I've worked with Bill for many, many years. And we try and get the word out and the message out, whether by television or via print or Bill's speeches. That's another way that we do it. I write a weekly column. It's on Huffington Post and Truth Out and a number of other places. We just have to keep struggling to get the message out.
Yeah, and again, you know, we love working with those groups, and I do use stories from all those all those groups because I think it's important that we communicate together and we get the word out.
Right.
And this thing, to me, scares me.
It scares me, too. It scares me, too, and not just for our memberships.
So, again, what should our listeners do?
What your listeners can do, and thank you all for listening tonight, what you can do is to go to our website, wgaeast.org/save the internet. You can send a letter to the White House about this. The FCC is going to take a vote on this next Tuesday. It's very important that your voices be heard. There's also other information there. There are some videos there that are very informative. And you can also go to some of the other groups like SaveTheInternet.org, which is Free Press's group. They've been doing tremendous work on this issue. And you can find out what else you can do.
Yeah. And what are we asking the president to do specifically?
Well, we're asking him to enforce what he campaigned on, basically. We're asking him to go to the FCC and tell those Democratic commissioners and the FCC chairman, who's, of course, a Democrat, that they have to vote in favor, that they have to rewrite that thing they're going to vote on Tuesday and make it stronger and make it positive for everybody.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Michael.
Yeah.
Michael Winship, president of the Writers Guild of America East. I appreciate your time, and I look forward to having you back again.
I would love to come back, and happy holidays to everybody.
Happy holidays to you, sir.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break. We're back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're back after this.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Time will change. It's time to rearrange.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me we're gonna make it somehow. I heard a wise man say revolution starts now.
You know, I gotta tell you, in looking at this net neutrality thing, it reminds me of where I grew up as a kid. Grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland, tucked over by the airport, and you would think that there'd be some public transportation nearby. There wasn't. Most of the time you had to walk a couple of miles, 2 miles to get to the nearest bus line. And what that did is it stopped a lot of people from being able to get out to the jobs that were in the suburbs, in the industrial parks. And the bus didn't always run on time. It ran, didn't run late in the evening, so you didn't have the opportunity. If you missed that last bus, you could be stranded. To me, there's a correlation between that of my childhood, that kind of transportation, physical transportation problem for commerce, and this net neutrality thing. Because if you don't have the lanes, if you don't have the ability to access the speed of the internet, you will be left out. If you don't have the ability to get online and put your resume on, or, I remember the dial-up getting kicked off half the time when peak times were going on. I remember that. And you should too, because it wasn't that long ago. And what you're getting now is you're getting these big companies going, well, we should be able to charge. We should be able to charge big money. If people want access to our stuff. It's the free market, remember? But let me remind you, it was our money that started this. It was our research and development that brought this about. I think that's important. And you look at the rest of the world. They're not having these problems. And if you go to the website Speed Matters, you can test how slow our internet in this country actually is. Compared to South Korea, compared to Japan, compared to China. And when you look at China, I'm telling you, they are the 800-pound gorilla in the room. New York Times piece today. The United States is too reliant on China for minerals crucial to new clean energy technologies. This is what the guy wrote, making the American economy vulnerable to shortages of materials needed for a range of green products, from compact fluorescent light bulbs to electric cars to giant wind turbines. The United States Energy Department this morning came out with a report saying, look, we're in big trouble, and it predicts in the next 15 years, it could take us that long to break our dependence on Chinese supplies. If we were to act right now, if we were to do something today, which if you look at the Republican Party of no, do you really think that they're going to act? No. The report says at least 96% of the most crucial types of so-called rare earth minerals are now produced in China. And Beijing has wielded various export controls to limit the supply to other countries. Why? Because they want to corner the market. They want to be the leader in building the technology of the next generation. And we've basically given that to them. We've basically said, okay, we came up with this stuff. We invented it. We're the ones who made it feasible. Now you Chinese go ahead and build it. And I look at another story by the Times. To conquer wind power, China rewrites the rules, it says. And judging by the din at its factory, here on one recent day, Spanish company Gamesa may seem to be thriving player in the Chinese wind industry that it helped create, but Gamesa has learned the hard way. as other foreign manufacturers have, that competing for Chinese lucrative businesses means playing by strict house rules that are often stacked. So basically what's going on is you want to build a product in China? You're going to follow our rules. You're going to teach our companies locally how to build their stuff. So Gamesa, this is just one example. And there's a Gamesa plant here in Pennsylvania, which is why I found this story interesting. They went into China. Said, we want a piece of the action. You guys are going to be spending hundreds of billions of dollars building wind turbines. We'd like a piece of it. So they came in. Understand, China didn't really have any wind turbine industry. They had nothing. So in comes Gamesa. Hey, we're going to corner the market. Woohoo! They had to train all of the supplier businesses locally. Some 500 businesses, 500 companies, they had to train on how to make their specific product. Think about this. Think about what a con this is and how stupid Gamesa can be, or any company for that matter. They go in, they say, okay, train our workforce, teach us how to make it. Then they turn around, and this is the brilliant part of it. They start making their own turbines, which is exactly what's happened to Gamesa. And just in 5 years, Gamesa went from having access to the market, being the only guy in town, to have lost 85% of the wind industry business to the Chinese, who took their assembly line and now are making their own wind turbines nationally. And you look at industry after industry, you wonder why any company would go there, and you look at the Gamesa argument. They're saying, well, we made the right decision going. Granted, we don't make as many as we used to, but we're still profitable because we're making some and we're there. Even though they've completely lost their own patents, they've lost their own way of doing things, and now China is exporting stuff, so they're losing business all across the globe.
How could that be a good deal? It, like you explained, Rick, I mean, they had to do all that research. It took them years and years to build up their business to where it was. They sold it cheap. Long term, it's almost like paying for your own extension.
Yeah. Well, they want cheap labor. You know, again, we have people who think very short term. Understand that here in this country, General Electric had been long the leader in wind turbines. They're getting their butts kicked by the Chinese. Why? Because Jack Welch, well, back, 15, 20 years ago, said the future of GE is China, China, China. Well, this is what happens. And you can go across the spectrum. High-speed rail trains. We don't make high-speed rail trains in the country. In fact, the ones that are going into California, if I'm not mistaken, are either Spanish or French. You look at down in Texas, the wind turbine farm, the big wind farm we're putting in, they're buying the turbines from China. When right here in Pennsylvania, Gamesa has built a plant, we should be supplying ourselves. And this is what China does. They demand local production. They demand that every spoke of the wheel, every piece of that product be built domestically. So if you're building, and this is where Mexico went wrong. Mexico didn't demand the entire pie. They allowed a part or a couple of parts and have it assembled somewhere else. China's not that stupid. China said, you know what? Sure, you can come here. You can exploit our labor. You can destroy our environment. But we're keeping your patents. We're going to learn how to build it, and we're going to kick your butt at it.
And again, they're better capitalists than we are. If you look back in their history, Rick, what they're doing obviously isn't fair to other businesses, but if you remember that in the last 100 years, we used to have wars. Remember when China was occupied by 5 or 6 different countries, and why were we there? We were there because we wanted to exploit their labor and their natural resources. Now China has said, no, this is our country. And at a certain level,
I don't blame them.
At a certain level, I mean, it's their country, it's their resources. The irony is some of the capitalists in this country could take a lesson from some of the things they do.
I mean, we're the dumb ones. I mean, the CEOs of the companies that head over there because, hey, short-term profit, woo-hoo, they're the ones who are getting the short end of the stick. Not the Chinese. They're the ones ending up with industry. They're taking, and look, you know where the money that we're giving to the top 1% in this country is going? It's going to Asia, because that's where the return is. So we are fueling our own demise as well. We, the working people, are saying, yeah, okay, go borrow a bunch of money from China. Give it to the very wealthy. Let them go create jobs in China. China can't lose in all of this. And it's amazing to me. And if you remember back in 2001, China agreed that, oh yeah, we'll play by the rules. You know, we'll abide by the WTO. Oh yeah. Good luck. And what I find interesting is even when there is a clear case of trade violation by the Chinese, our government and our corporations refuse to take those cases to the WTO. You know who has to do it? The steelworkers. I mean, you look at the tire case. The steelworkers brought the claim to the government, said, look, here it is. You don't have to do a thing. We've done it all here. And begrudgingly, you know, they took, okay, we'll take it. And they won. Oh, my God, we won. Yeah, because we got shafted. Even the companies didn't want the government to take that case before the WTO. Why? And think about this is what really drives me nuts. You had these tire companies who lost thousands of jobs in this country. They didn't care. Why? Because they were making the tires in China. It didn't matter to the companies because they're not U.S. companies. They're global citizens. And if they can get labor cheaper in China, they're going to go. If they can get it cheaper in Vietnam, they're going to go. If they can get it cheaper in Africa, you bet they're going to go. It's you who suffers. Because you look at the fact that, you know, when this trade case went the way it did, and they put the tariffs on the tires, you know what happened? That's right. The tire company started hiring Americans. And people started going back to work. You know, not the company didn't want that. Why? Less profit. Because it was more profitable to make those tires in China, ship them over here, and sell them at the same prices that you'd have sold them if you made them here. And to me, that's the real perverse part of all of this. And we have a government that allows that to happen. And we have people who are okay with it. You know, I look at all these foreign cars that are running up and down the road. I look at all of this foreign purchasing. And I say, you know, don't you care? And the sad thing is I really don't know that we do. I don't know. Anyway, this Saturday at noon, we're going to be doing our Hungry and Homeless for the Holidays event. I'd like everybody to come out. Say hello, bring a can of corn, maybe a case if you can afford it, a whole cart full if you can afford it even still. Stop out, say hello. We are offering our Winter Wonderland vacation package. $25 a night. We will give you the best of cardboard boxes, deluxe accommodations. You just bring your own blankets and pillows and stuff and, you know, do what you got to do to stay warm because it's going to be cold. But we're hoping to be able to fill up the truck. I want to thank our friends over at ABF for supplying that trailer for us to fill up. But look, you know, times are tough, struggles for all of us. You know, I think Elaine has the right idea. The food bank is like any bank. When times are good for you and when you're not struggling, you throw a couple of cans in, you make donations so that when you're struggling, you've got a place to go. And you can do it without losing your dignity.
And don't forget all the delicacies that Chef Rick will be making during the day.
Yeah, maybe I'll come up with a bagel.
on a serious note, you know, if anybody's listening out there and they want to maximize their effort, you know, ask the people you work with. You know, this isn't rocket science. Just get a bunch of the people who work together. You know, get some money together, get some groceries, and come on out. And we'll give you guys a heads up along with your employer. We can do that for you, and that way we can maximize your contributions, and you'll feel good. In the spirit of Christmas, there's a lot of people out there legitimately hurting.
Alrighty, we're gonna take a quick break. We're right back after this.
Just one more thing, just to play the game. Pump the tap. the working class majority. Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. AFSCME President Gerald McEntee says false and absurd statements attacking public workers as a privileged class are being incessantly repeated by right-wing media. That attack campaign, even falsely blaming public employees for the economic crisis, is being echoed by right-wing talk shows and conservative Republican politicians. AFSCME is defending public employees and their families from this assault with a Stop the Lies campaign. McEntee says by blaming public workers, the right wing is trying to divert attention away from the real privileged class on Wall Street and their reckless behaviors that enriched them while plunging the rest of us into a financial crisis. For more information on the Stop the Lies campaign, go to AFSCME.org/stop the lies. Rite Aid drugstore workers are leafleting dozens of Rite Aid stores nationwide in a national day of action today to call attention to what the UFCW's Bill Epstein calls the company's culture of corporate greed. Epstein says Rite Aid workers are defending themselves from an assault on their living standards and job rights.
It's ironic that at a time when corporate profits are at a record high, unemployment is also at a record high. There's no question that the way this economy has been treating working men and women has been a disaster. If you see union members outside of Rite Aid's today, please take their flyers and give them to the store manager or to workers inside the store and ask them to pass it along to their corporate headquarters. You can visit Facebook and Twitter and pick up a message there and send it to Rite Aid corporate headquarters.
In a time when airlines are gutting unions and employee contracts, workers at Alaska Airlines came out on top. Jesse Russell reports.
The new proposed contract between Alaska Airlines and its clerical office and passenger service employees, represented by the International Association of Machinists, is likely to be approved by members based on the quality of the contract. The new three-year contract will see a $1,500 signing bonus, raises, expanded job security protections, and entry into the airline's performance-based pay annual incentive plan. On top of that, workers won't see increases in health care costs. The contract also offers some workers the option of telecommuting if they can perform their work at home. In a statement, Alaska Airlines Vice President of Human Resources and Labor Relations, Kelly Dobbs, said the agreement reflects the outstanding customer service efforts of employees. The two sides have been in negotiation since March of 2010.
700 was the unlucky number on Tuesday. News leaked early in the day that internet search engine Yahoo could be laying off between 600 and 700 employees. This would be the fourth layoff in 3 years for the company and would amount to a workforce cut of 5%. Northern Indiana, already struggling with a high unemployment rate, was also hit with some bad news as TJX Company announced it would be shuttering a distribution center for its discount chain, AJ Wright. If that plan moves forward, 700 employees at the center will start receiving pink slips in February. This newscast made possible in part by the American Federation of Teachers, a union of professionals. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
We keep South Central Pennsylvania wired. We are the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 143, right here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And for 93 years, we have proudly provided our contractors and their customers with the highest skilled and best educated electricians in the industry. Whether it's wiring a light socket in a Habitat for Humanity's home or replacing a vital component on a nuclear reactor, our professional electricians do the job right the first time. Our members are the backbone of our community and our nation, working to make tomorrow a brighter day. If you want to join us, or if you need an electrician for your industrial or commercial project, call us at 717-232-7093 or visit our website at www.ibewlocal143.org. We are the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 143, and we keep South Central Pennsylvania wired.
Always by your side.
As soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all.
It's class warfare. My class is winning, but they shouldn't be.
A working class hero is something to be.
The taxation system has tilted toward the rich and away from the middle class.
A working class hero is something to be.
Do you think, Warren, do you think it's tilted away from the working class towards the rich? Do you think? Jeez, wow. AP story today, Labor Department is adding a dozen countries to the list of nations that use child labor or forced labor, as officials warn the global economic crisis could cause an upswing in the exploitation of children and other workers, from coffee grown in El Salvador to sapphires mined in Madagascar. The agency's latest report, released today, identified 128 goods in 70 countries where child labor, forced labor, or both are used in violation of international standards. India remains the home of the greatest number of child laborers, followed by, of course, China. But a smaller number of sub-Saharan African countries have a much higher proportion of children in the workforce. Up to one-third of all children under the age of 14 go to work instead of school each day. Globally, there is an estimated 215 million children working. Kind of makes you wonder. And, you know, you think about what's going on here in this country. We talk about some of the things that, some of the injustices, some of the things corporate America has done. And for me, I you know, we've been talking about the Express Script situation for a while. That's settled. So they're no longer my Scrooge of the year. But we're going to find out who is. I've got Erica Smiley on the line. She's with Jobs with Justice to talk a little bit about their Scrooge of the Year campaign. Erica, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You know, I was pushing for Express Script, but you know, evidently they have done the right thing, so to speak, and settled their problem. Who else is on the list?
Oh man, we've got a good list this year. We had Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, Mitch Buffett of the Rich, who was nominated for leading the Republican Party and aggressively blocking legislation that would benefit working people. We had Hyatt, the hotel chain, was nominated for trying to eliminate quality health care and essentially make the recession permanent for all of its employees and also for their safety record. Rite Aid was chosen for failing to bargain a first contract with workers who joined the union 2 years ago and demanding unreasonable concessions from other workers. Publix, the Southern grocery chain, was selected because they won't join other companies in pledging to improve wages and working conditions for the farm workers who pick their tomatoes. And GMRO Vineyards is a candidate because of their long-standing history of intimidation and bullying workers and violating their rights. And then we have this interesting nomination for the first time. The entire industry was nominated. The health and pharmaceutical industry was nominated for their single-minded focus on profits at the expense of our health.
Okay.
And the winner goes too.
Oh, do you have a winner?
Well, we should. If at this point we have an overwhelming majority of votes coming in. I haven't checked the final numbers, but I can tell you that Mitch McConnell has a huge lead.
No, I don't want him to win.
You don't want him to win?
No, because I just don't want to get hit. I don't want him to have any recognition whatsoever. Because,
not even as the fattest cat of them all?
No, because he would. I think he's the type of guy who would take that as a privilege, as something to be proud of.
Oh, no.
I do. I think he's that well.
No, that might happen. I mean, that's definitely happened before. They tried to give Crown Central Petroleum CEO Henry Rosenberg an award years back, and he said he was so proud of it, he was going to frame it and put it on his wall. But shortly afterwards, he actually ended up ending the dispute with workers, and they ended up winning significant gains back. So it's still possible.
That's a good thing. Well, let me ask you this. How long have you been doing the Scrooge of the Year award?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, local Jobs with Justice coalitions around the country have been doing, you know, Greedy Scrooge Awards in their hometowns almost all the way back to our founding in 87. But nationally, we held our first national Scrooge contest in the year 2000.
Let's talk about Jobs with Justice for folks who may not know. What's your mission? What do you guys do? Tell me a little bit about yourselves.
Sure. Jobs with Justice is a national network of local community and labor coalitions, and our mission really is to fight for the issues of workers both at the work site but also in our communities. So when we come home, we're still workers, and so this goes from bread and butter organizing fights, and contract fights on the job, as well as issues of health care, issues of public transit and public services and stuff like that in our communities.
You know, I look at this healthcare, you know, fight that's been going on for the last year or so, and to be honest, I don't know how you can possibly be in the middle class in this country without some health security. And I think this is one of those middle class issues, one of those working class issues that, to be honest, we should be fighting harder for. And I'm surprised that we haven't seen more groups, honestly, fighting harder for this.
Absolutely. I mean, in order to win real dignity and quality of life for working people in the country, health care and benefits like that just have to be at the center of it.
If you want to vote for the Scrooge of the Year, I suggest you go to JWJ.org. There's a spot there for where you can vote for Scrooge of the Year. Have your voice heard there, and I guess we'll find out quickly when the decision comes down. Let's talk about Rite Aid for a little bit. I know they had a day of action yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, Rite Aid has failed to bargain a first contract with workers who've been in struggle with them for over 2 years. And so around the country, folks were mobilizing at local Rite Aid stores and delivering letters to managers and leafleting customers trying to get them to come to the table.
You know, I look at this kind of stuff, and, you know, the Express Scripts situation, I've taken the position that the only reason we heard anything about Express Scripts or we've heard anything about what's going on with Rite Aid is because the workers had a voice or were fighting for a voice on the job. Had they not been anywhere near collective bargaining, you'd never heard a peep about it. It probably wouldn't even made a story in the newspaper.
Not even close.
And it's because people did come together and organize and do the things that labor has been famous for these years, that they were able to, in the Express Scripts situation, save their jobs and hopefully in the Rite Aid situation, better their livelihoods.
Absolutely. And these are just two of many fights that we're going to be facing in the upcoming year and the upcoming 2 years, frankly, if you look at the congressional calendar. I mean, workers are really fighting for their rights to organize, just period. The unions are having to fight for the right just to exist. If you look at the defensive fights happening all across the Midwest with the state legislators trying to implement right-to-work-for-less laws, which would prevent workers from form unions, or at least make it very hard for them to form unions, laws would prevent the Employee Free Choice Act, even if it did pass nationally, from being implemented on a state level, laws allowing states to opt out of health care, prevailing wage. I mean, you name it, they're trying to really roll back workers' rights to just operate a function. General. Meanwhile, you know, the allowing corporations to engage more and put in more money without any checks and balances while they're making it more difficult for workers to engage in just their basic rights.
Yeah, you know, one of the things you brought up there is the right to work for less thing. Pennsylvania, I fear, could mm-hmm. be the first Northeast state to become a right to work for less state. That's
right.
A scary proposition in my opinion.
Oh, tell me about it. I mean, they are eyeballing Pennsylvania, Ohio, Missouri is in the fight for their lives. I mean, Indiana is going to have a huge right to work for less fight. I mean, as a field organizer for the southern region, the only reason we aren't engaged in that same high-stakes fight is because we've had it for centuries, decades, I should say.
Well, let me ask you, you know, as Pennsylvania moves toward this, because I know most people have no idea and have no stake, really don't feel that they have a stake in the game when it comes to this right to work for less legislation that they might be passing. What would you tell people who really don't know anything about the issue? What's the thing that you'd want them to know?
I'd want them to know that the way that it's being spun is completely misleading. It's going to completely limit unions' ability to function and operate by curbing its ability to collect dues. And then just very simply stated, if they heard nothing else, I'll say one thing. I'm from the right-to-work-for-less state of North Carolina. That's where I originally grew up. Union density in North Carolina is 2%.
Wow.
And I can't imagine, you know, in Pennsylvania, I'm sure there's at least in most of the parts of the state, you can think of a neighbor, an uncle, someone that you know who's either been a part of a union or is a part of a union or is around a union. North Carolina, you know, for decades, that just hasn't been the case. So try to imagine a Pennsylvania like that, and that's what you'll have with right to work for less.
Wow, that's scary. Let me ask you this, Erica Smiley. Jobs with Justice, JWJ.org is the website.
That's right.
What If someone wanted to get involved with Jobs with Justice, what would they do? Could they? Is it something they can do? Is it something that you're pursuing?
There are so many things you can do. I mean, step one is if you go to jwj.org, you can sign up for the activist list and, of course, be a part of all of these different actions around Riot Aid, around the Hyatt, around Publix, around all these different things. Wherever you are, you can organize your own action. Step two is if there's a local coalition in your area, you can get involved with them locally as well and engage in campaigns and fights that are happening in your own region. If you go to jwj.org, you can click on local coalitions. There's a map, and you can find out exactly where we are. And if you are a leader in a union or a local organization or even a church, you know, you can give us a call if you have relationships and want to actually engage in building a coalition in your area.
All right. Erica Smiley, Jobs with Justice. JWJ.org is the website. I appreciate your time. Thanks so much for talking to us and bringing us up to date on the Scrooge of the Year Award. I look forward to finding out who the winner is this year.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having us.
I appreciate it. Anytime. Erica, thanks. We're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
We are now in the midst of a brand new world economies. I don't believe them, I won't despair. They are regrouping, they're coming back to stay. The 10% can't climb back up to 50% once again, my friend.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
When you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
You know, there was a story in the New York Times today that grabbed my attention. Because, you know, I've talked about this in the past. This so-called soda tax, which I got to be honest with, I'm in favor of. I think it's probably a smart thing to do. I think having a sin tax, if you will, is not a bad idea. You know, there are health effects that come along with drinking too much soda. There are health effects that come along with eating too much fast food. I do think there should be something in place to say, you know what, have as much as you want. But you're going to have to help. You're going to have to help pay for the negative side effects. So the New York Times wrote, over the last year, the group Save the Children emerged as a leader in the push to tax sweetened soft drinks as a way to combat childhood obesity. The nonprofit group supported soda tax campaigns in Mississippi, New Mexico, Washington State, Philadelphia, and the District of Columbia. At the very same time, the executives at Save the Children were seeking a major grant from, you guessed it, go ahead, you can say it, from Coca-Cola, so that they could help finance their health and education program that evidently the charity conducts here and abroad, including its work on childhood obesity. The talks with Coke are still ongoing, I guess, but the soda tax work has been stopped. In October, Save the Children surprised activists around the country with an email message announcing that it would no longer support efforts to tax soft drinks. In interviews this month, Carolyn Miles, chief operating officer of Save the Children, said there's no connection between the group's about face on the soda tax and the $5 million grant that they got from Pepsi, or the money that they were asking from Coke. No, had nothing to do with it. Completely no influence whatsoever. In fact, you know, completely the opposite. Oh, you know, completely the opposite. Both companies, you do know, are absolutely opposed to this, to the soda tax. So do you think it could be unreasonable to think that $5 million from Pepsi, a whole boatload of money from Coke, may have swayed Save the Children's role in this soda tax? Do you think it could have had anything to do with that? Because, you know, maybe I'm just cynical. Maybe I'm just cynical, Jake, to think that a good corporation like Coke or Pepsi would use a couple of bucks to sway the Save the Children people.
I could seriously say that with a straight face.
I have no idea.
And they wonder why people are cynical of public officials. I mean, it's a good organization. I don't want to demean them, but
I think they're demeaning themselves.
Why do
I think they're demeaning themselves.
You know, tell them what it is. Say what it is. You decided that you're going to back off. In return, you're going to get more money from Coke, and in the end, you're going to be able to help. In your mind, I'm sure this is the decision they made. They'll be able to help more children. But be honest. Be upfront.
You know,
was it a factor when Coke came in and put pressure on you? Of course it was.
You know, here's the thing. There's only one state in the country that I think that's actually legal in, and that's Nevada. Second oldest profession in the world.
Okay.
You come. I know you're down for the count there. Just helping you through it. Second. Okay. That's what I think. I think they're practicing what the second oldest profession is. Legal only in Nevada, obviously. Again, but here's the thing, and I had a conversation with somebody today talking about the wine and spirit shops, the state stores, and the information that was given to me is that there's a belief that the Catholic Church has backed out of opposing the sale of the spirit wine and spirit shops, the state stores. Because, and this is weird, because the Catholic Church, you know, when I was a kid, you know, they did preach some of that moral stuff. They, you know, didn't want you to drink to excess, didn't want you to, you know, to do some of those sinny kind of things, you know. And I guess, you know, abusing the grape, I guess, is a good way of putting it, probably wasn't the best thing for society. So they would have always been on the side of regulating it, making sure that it wasn't in everyone's hands. I'm now told that there's a belief that there was a deal cut. And this is just purely conjecture.
Speculation.
But I don't doubt it. And this is the part that gets me. I don't doubt that the Catholic Church, as an institution, opted to back off the sale of the state stores in exchange for the vouchers so that they could get more people into their schools that the government would pay for. And I remember back when I was a kid, Catholic churches didn't want government money because they didn't want the influence. They didn't want to have to abide by the rules.
They want the mandates.
And now that they've torn down those rules, and now we have these wonderful vouchers that Corbett is touting, I don't doubt that they would happen. And I understand, you know,
I was Catholic at one point. Now I'm an American. I can admit it. I still remember as a kid. And this is one of, and this is, I guess, why I'm so jaded, I guess. When I was a kid, we used to have to go to church every Sunday as part of going to the school. And every Sunday you had to take an envelope because they printed up envelopes with your name on it. And that's how they took attendance. And it's how they made sure you brought your money. Problem is, my mother didn't have any money. So there were times, usually the last 2 weeks of the month, where we had no money, where no money went into the envelope. Well, don't you know, Monday morning rolls around, the church is calling my mother going, hey, where's the money? Where's the money? You know, you're supposed to tithe. And my mother's like, you know, there's nothing in the cabinets. I got a kid to feed, you know, I got bills to pay, sorry. But they call every Monday like that. And, you know, I never forgot that. And I guess that's what's really shaping my thought process on this, that memory of the institution of the Catholic Church, the business side, if you will. And I think I can see that.
I went to school with a bunch of kids, and they went to Catholic school, and I talked about it a lot of times. They got a better education, but one of the reasons they got a better education is because they didn't have those mandates. They didn't have to take certain students that perhaps had learning disabilities that were a bit unruly, that perhaps public schools had problems with. And apparently now they're willing to put up with some of them problems for a couple shillings.
Yeah, they gotta have their money. Show me the money. Amazing stuff. Anyway, President Obama has tapped rock star Bon Jovi to serve on a new presidential advisory council. Bon Jovi, who founded a nonprofit to provide affordable housing for the homeless, will join the new 25-member House White House Council for Community Solutions, a panel established to provide advice on the best way to mobilize citizens, nonprofits, businesses, and government to work more effectively to solve specific community needs. The reason I bring that up, of course, our food drive. I think the best way to solve the problems of a community are to get the community involved, to one, make people aware of the problem and allow them to be part of the solution, which is why we will be starting Saturday at noon. We'll be living in the giant parking lot there, 255 South Spring Garden Street, to bring attention to the problem of homelessness and hunger in our community. We hope you'll come out and bring us a can of corn or something. I'll never forget the one homeless woman who came by and brought a can of lima beans. And the reason I remember that is I hate lima beans. But that's what she could afford. And, you know, she came by and she was, you know, extremely gracious. And, you know, she said, I don't have much, but I did want to donate. And I did want to help. And, you know, it kind of reminded me of that whole Bible story where, you know, the rich guy came in with, you know, a lot of money and a lot of stuff. And it was the woman who put the little bit that she had in the pot that was most appreciated and most rewarded. And I remember that woman. And I got to be honest, I hope she's doing well. And I hope that all of the people that we met during our homeless time, I hope they're doing well. Because, you know, those stories, those people stick with me. And I think that's part of the reason that we do this, Jake, because it is about meeting people. It is about being part of the solution. And again, if you want to join us December 18th through the 24th, we will be in the giant parking lot, 255 South Spring Garden Street, right there in Carlisle. Also, you can go to hungryandhomeless.org to make donations through our PayPal account. The money goes right to an account for Project Share, and it is split between Project Share and Carlisle Cares. All of it is tax deductible. All of it you can write off on your April 15th taxes, and that will be a very good thing to help our community. I think it's going to be a great event, and I know you're going to come out and help us out in this and help the community. And I'm hoping for some people yelling at me. But again, if you're going to come and yell at me, you know, it's like anything. You better be throwing a couple bucks into the till. It's like those peep shows. You can look and scream and, you know, watch the, you know, the act in there, but every once in a while you gotta keep feeding the meter. Anyway, hungryandhomeless.org. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Okay. Money. It's a gas.
Smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
America's leaders can't seem to get a grip on the stands. The White House, Congress, the Pentagon, and assorted war hawks keep insisting that our soldiers and billions of our tax dollars must stay committed to defeating the Taliban in Afghanistan and creating a stable Afghan government with a strong army to keep the Taliban down. Luckily, they say, the government of neighboring Pakistan is our ally in this noble cause. Indeed, our whole war strategy depends on our Pakistani friends helping us defeat Taliban forces in their own country, thus weakening them next door. If it all comes together, Afghanistan will flourish as an independent force in the region. In summary, to build up Afghanistan, we need Pakistan to tear down the Taliban. Get it? Neither do our leaders. It seems that Pakistan is not really helping us, despite our constant pleas and threats. Why? Because there's a fundamental flaw in our leaders' assumptions. Pakistan, you see, doesn't hate, fear, or really want to get rid of the Taliban in either country. Pakistan's real concern is with its powerful, antagonistic, and aggressive neighbor on its eastern border, India. In fact, Pakistanis see a strong Taliban in Afghanistan as a check on the possibility that India would establish a stronghold there, thus threatening Pakistan from the west and east. Not only does Pakistan see the Taliban as a useful ally, but Pakistani intelligence agencies helped the Afghan Taliban rise to power in the first place. This is Jim Hightower saying, yes, this is a convoluted mess. But in essence, it comes down to this. Pakistan's national security interests in Afghanistan are in direct contradiction to ours. So the real question is not why Pakistan won't do more to help us, but why the hell are our war leaders putting American troops on the line for a strategy that can't work?
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
Back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Also, you can go to the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the show and you want to catch up, you missed it yesterday, it's all right there at the website. If you want to email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com, I do answer all emails personally. I enjoy hearing from our listeners and the interaction. I like to hear what you have to say and your thoughts, your opinions. Because that's what makes this program. That's what makes us, that's what helps us get the word out. Our Borowitz report, headlines in controversial decision. Time magazine calls Mark Zuckerberg a person. The editors of Time ignited a firestorm of controversy today by being the first people ever to call Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg a person. The decision to call the robot-like internet titan a person raised eyebrows from Silicon Valley to Wall Street, forcing Time spokesperson Carol Feuer to acknowledge this wasn't an easy call. Just hours after Time published its issue designating Zuckerberg a person, a protest group of over 10,000 people who had been screwed over by Mark Zuckerberg marched down the magazine's Manhattan offices, led by twins Cameron and Tyler Winklevoss,
made famous in the movie Social Network. Wickleby said, if Mark Zuckerberg is a person, then we're the Jonas Brothers. Elsewhere, WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange said he wasn't surprised that filmmaker Michael Moore posted bail for him, saying, I recognized his MasterCard number. Scary, scary, scary stuff. I like Borowitz. I think he's funny, and I think it's always good to poke fun at things. If you didn't realize that that is satire, some folks go, really? You know, I had someone the other day go, really? They broke into Sarah Palin's brain and found nothing? And I guess, it's not hard to believe if you've ever seen that TV show she's got. Anyway, after many years of legal uncertainty, a federal appeals court has finally declared the emails, that emails have the same Fourth Amendment protections as regular mail and telephone calls. I have always often wondered about that. You know, when you work for somebody, do they have access to your email? Just because you use their computer to send that email back and forth, should they have the right to do that? I don't know. The Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled, given the fundamental similarities between email and traditional forms of communication, it would defy common sense to afford emails lesser Fourth Amendment protection. If the ruling is not overturned by the Supreme Court, it will put an end to the practice of law enforcement agents using court orders rather than warrants to gain access to emails. Court orders require a much lower standard than warrants. Kevin Bankston of the digital rights group EFF told Wired.com he expects internet service providers will comply with the ruling, meaning that they will start requesting warrants when law enforcement requests access to emails. Privacy advocates say law enforcement has been using a loophole in the 1986 Stored Communications Act to get emails without a warrant. Under the law, information stored on servers is subject only to a court order. I got to be honest. I'm in favor of it. I'm in favor of the ruling. But, I'm of the mindset that anything you send out over the Internet, somebody's going to get a hold of. And once you throw it out there, they got it, man. Thoughts?
That's one of the disadvantages. Computers and all, Facebook and all that, that's a nice service. It allows many, many people to communicate at a certain level, but you know what? Once you put that out there, anyone with a computer can see it. That's the disadvantage. And I think people think they're just communicating with a couple people. That's not true. You throw it out, for instance, Facebook. There's a lot of people, including you, on Facebook. Once it's out there, anybody can see it.
Yeah, the whole thing is, and we've talked about this in the past, employers are starting to look at people's Facebook and their social networking sites to see if, people are suitable for hire. And I go, why would you, I'm amazed at some of the stuff that I see, but I can understand it. I put some stuff on there. You want to have a discussion. I often wonder about myself. What kind of stuff are people going to look for in 5 or 10 years that I've written?
Well,
drunken naked pictures, probably not the best thing.
No, but come on now. If we're discussing our political views, why should an employer, give a rat's what, whether you're a conservative, a liberal, or you're non-political, what does that have to do with being a good employee? And I'm afraid that kind of thing is entering into it. I got a problem with it, but again, what are you going to do? If you're smart, you'll weigh some of the things you put out there.
that's the advice I give anybody. Like my grandfather always said, don't put your backside out in the street. You don't want people knowing your business, don't put it out there.
You mean that man you didn't like, but do you quote all the time?
I do. Hey, look,
Smart old man.
He may have been an a-hole, but he lived almost 80 years. And you don't get to be 80 years old being stupid.
Well, maybe he's trying to snooker you.
Yeah.
So that you'd listen to him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'll bet my last dollar on that.
It worked, apparently.
You know, hey, what's that saying? What doesn't kill you makes you stronger?
That's right. That's he forced you to be strong.
Well, there you go. Republicans won the midterm elections, obviously, but they really haven't won the trust of the American people. A new Washington Post ABC News poll says that public trusts President Obama marginally more than they trust congressional Republicans to address the country's problems. By a 43-38 percentage, they trust Obama over the congressional Republicans. Most continue to say that the Republicans in Congress are not doing enough to compromise with President Obama on important issues. And I read this and I go, then why in God's name did you vote for these people? Why? Why? Tell me why. Why would you do this? You know, if you don't trust the Republicans, why would you vote for them?
At the end of the day, Rick, this is about the 10th time we talked about it. Republicans were fired up. They got their base out. Too many of the people on the Democratic side, instead of maybe holding their nose a little bit, maybe saying, you know, this isn't the perfect candidate, but it's better than the Republicans. Unfortunately, their reaction was to be turned off and stay home. And when you do that, you're actually giving your vote to someone else, and that's exactly what happened.
Yep. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid and Minority Leader Mitch McConnell have been negotiating in hopes of finding an agreement to, quote, confirm more judicial nominees before adjourning for the year. Huffington Post's Ryan Grimm notes that Obama has experienced the slowest pace of judicial confirmations in at least a generation, with a paltry 39.8% of Obama's justices being confirmed. The party of no has done an amazing job. They have blocked every aspect of government. They have completely slowed the process to the point where you've now got judges writing letters to Congress saying, please, please send us help. Send us anybody. You know, let the janitor sit on the bench. We need somebody to decide some of these cases. The workload is killing us. And the Republicans answer, no, not going to do it. Because they're hoping to wait two more years so that all of those openings will be there for their nominee, for their president, for their side of this, which is kind of what's happened throughout the years. You've got all these Republican judges, all of the Reagan, Bush judges, they got through. Now, the Democrats did hold up a couple, but just a couple. And that's the thing that gets me. There's this politicking, this governing. Republicans are very good at politicking, not so good at the governing part. Harry Reid warned yesterday that he'll bring the Senate back after Christmas to address unfinished work in the lame duck session, such as the START Treaty, the DREAM Act, and the Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal, while Senator John Kyle, Arizona Republican, called such plans disrespectful to Congress and to Christians. Reid said Congress ends January 4th, and we're going to continue working on that stuff until it gets done. And I got to tell you, me, okay, you can have Christmas off. Go do your Christian thing. Go, you know, watch the manger and do all that stuff like my family will do for Christmas. And then, like my family will do on the 26th, you get your butt back to work. Like most Americans do, you go back to work. In fact, you know, when I was driving, 10 o'clock Christmas night, I had to go to work. That's what real Americans have to put up with. That's what working class people have to put up with. And you know what? I'd like to see our senators. I would love to put any one of our elected officials through the first 11 years of my career working with the one trucking company I worked with. I would love to have them just a week. Just a week to put up with what working people have to put up with. You know, I was on call for the first 11 years, living by the phone. Phone would ring, 2 hours, got to be to work. And I know
hundreds of people, thousands of people who do the same thing. I made a decent living, had good benefits, had a good pension. I'm not complaining.
And weren't you gone for a couple days sometimes?
Sometimes.
A whole week? Didn't you say it?
A couple of times. Not that often, though. That was a rarity.
But there were some who had runs like that.
There were some who wanted that. You know,
really?
They hated their wives. They just wanted to be gone. And, you know, hey, I understand that.
Oh, you mean the...
I understand some people...
You mean the
like
Christian that. You work with that had a baby with his mistress? Is that the guy? Yeah. One of the guys you're thinking of?
No, he was on a real good schedule. He would go up for a day and a half, spend with the family up there, back home a day and a half, spend with the family there. You know, and had the, you know,
yeah,
it worked out.
All right, you got to give him credit. It's called family values now. He's taking care of both families.
Hey, and he did, and I give him credit for that. He did that. But here's the thing.
The one didn't know the other one existed.
Well, there was that. But
how did he hide that? I mean, I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know. I don't know how you hide that.
Well, see, I'm not that good at juggling. I'm very poor at that kind of juggling.
I'm laughing, but good Lord.
And my problem is I'm a horrible liar. I really am. You know, because you have to remember the lie. That's the problem. You got to remember that. And I just never could. Anyway, let's take a quick break. We'll be back to wrap things up. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one, call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211. You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well. Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211. How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave? Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211. Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike. Call him at 243-3211. You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too. So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211. Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings. That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Lots there. If you want to participate in the little blog that we've started, you can leave comments there. I'm interested in your thoughts, your ideas. Again, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. The Pittsburgh Tribune
had an article today that I found interesting. Republican House members who will control the chamber in January have come to a consensus to give up state fleet cars, pay towards their own health care benefits, and curb per diem abuses. Some lawmakers say it's a move to work with incoming Governor-elect Tom Corbett, basically, you know, going through with one of his campaign pledges, because if you remember, he said we've got to reduce the car fleet, even though his section there at the Attorney General's office had asked for more and their budgets were higher, but that's a whole other thing. They want to have more accountability with per diems. I'm right in favor with that. The flat undocumented payment for lawmakers who stay overnight is about $157 per night, which I think is a bit excessive, because I think the federal reimbursement rate for per diems is only $42 for meals. So, you know, you got to wonder about that. Corbett put the issue on the map with millions of dollars of attack ads. But here's the thing. And this is one of the things that I often wonder about. So we get away from having the state-run, the state vehicles, right? But we're going to pay them mileage. How much is it at the end of the road? Again, this is one of those things that has my mind thinking, okay, we're not going to have a state-run vehicle that we own and we take care of and maintain and all of that stuff. They're going to use their cars. They're going to charge us per mile to use their cars. How much is it going to cost us in the long run? And will it be one of those things, again, once you've privatized it, once you've pushed it off, will it then be more expensive? That's my concern. I would love to see the results of that. They're going to pay for their own health care. You know how much they're going to pay? 1%. Oh, boy. Wow. I'm just... I got to be honest. I'm stopped in my tracks.
He's talking about the legislature now only.
Right.
Because I know that some of the work, they were mad 4 years ago. They were mad at Rendell because some of them had to pay the grand total of about 2% and get this, Rick. They were complaining about that, and all they had to do is enter into that a program where you report your weight every so often, and they would cut that in half. So they were complaining because they had to pay 2%. So I do know that all of them, ASME members that work for the state were already paying for their health care. So,
yep.
I mean, 1% in today's market, wow. I mean, really, that's not going to make that much of a difference.
But, you know, they ran on the platform that we're going to be like the private sector.
They're really going to put the screws to them, Rick.
1%. Oh my gosh.
I'm going to call my state senator, Mike Fulmer. Mike, I'm coming to your rescue, buddy. I got my bucket ready.
I got my 30 cents. Here you go.
Yep. Got the old bucket ready.
But, you know, that's, to me, it's another one of those things. It's more of a political thing than it is an actual cost-saving thing. But, you know, they're trying to hold true to what they ran on. You got to give them credit for that. They're cutting their own budgets. Okay, good. Let's see how it works out.
Mm-hmm.
It is the holiday season.
Yes.
And we all do our Christmas shopping. Fortunately, I am done. Last weekend, family did our Christmas Day shopping, and we are now complete. But if you're not done with your shopping, a couple of ideas.
And there's a new phenomenon. I personally do not like to do that. I do not. Some people like to watch TV. Some people like to go on their computer. If you're so inclined and you're looking for union-made gifts, unionlabel.org, that's unionlabel.org, it'll give you a long list of union-made gifts. And nice
unionlabel.org.
Unionlabel.org, correct.
Okay.
Nice site. Go on there. You can help union Irish workers. There's a nice selection.
What kind of stuff do they have?
Well, I've been on there. All kinds of stuff. Clothing, shoes, you name it. Just the regular, you know, whatever union products are made, it will be on there. So it's a nice variety. If you're looking for specialized gifts, if you're looking for what the UAW has as far as buying American, UAW has a site on the AFL-CIO online union store. That's AFL-CIO online union store. You can go on there. UAW has their site if you're looking and want to know where cars are made. That's a good place to go. Also, the CWA, if you're looking for a mobile phone, AT&T Mobility, CWA has a nice site on there. It'll give you an idea of what kind of things they sell. It'll give you an idea for a gift, either buying a cell phone or an accessory. So there's some nice things that I would recommend. Again, that's online union store at the AFL-CIO's website. Good place to go. One other story quick, Rick. I know we've been hashing about that. I should have brought this up when we talked about Walmart. Of all the things that involve these tax breaks, and this brings it out. I mean, I envision these 58 million people in Social Security that we're talking about here. The last 2 years, I believe, they haven't gotten a cost of living raise. So there was an effort in Congress to, you know, given the economy and given how bad it is, cost of living gone up. They made an effort to try to get them just a $250 one-time shot. You know, $250, you know, when you're on Social Security and you have a little income, especially right in Christmas time, is a nice shot. And you multiply that times 58, you could say that's kind of a mini-stimulus. Well, they took it to the Senate, and they couldn't get the 60 votes needed to shut off a filibuster in the Senate. That failed 53-45. In the House, what the Democrats did, they brought the bill up under the House suspension calendar, which means that they suspended the rules, which means that for that bill to pass, they had to have a two-thirds majority. Well, they had a majority, but not two-thirds. They had 254-4, 153 against, with the 100 of the 153 no's, 141 Republicans voted no. And I'd like to know who those Grinches were, the Democrats that voted no on that.
Did you look it up?
12 on I could, and, you know, maybe by tomorrow night I can tell you exactly who they are. I do know this, Rick. There weren't any area Democrats who voted against it. But that's a good point. I'd like to know who these Grinches are. And here's the bottom line. You know, Bernie Sanders, God bless him. I mean, this guy he's a spear point. He's becoming the conscience of the Democratic Party. And he said this. He said this is unconscionable. He said the Walmart family, the Waltons, will get in tax breaks with these tax breaks that look like they'll probably pass, the extension of the tax breaks for the top 2%. The Walton family will receive 2.5 times, just one family, during the course of these tax breaks, will receive 2.5 times the cost of giving 58 million individuals on Social Security a $250 raise. Now, you think about that. 2.5 times. And that $250, I guarantee you, Rick, would be spent. Plowed back into the economy,
probably
given to
drug.
People. And remember, many of these people, a lot of people don't understand about Social Security. Yes, it was meant as an anti-poverty program, but many of the senior citizens, that's all the income they have, or 80 or 90%. And you talk about encapsulating the immorality of the Republicans. Now, you think about what they did on this bill.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's just unforgivable.
Yeah. Remember, on Saturday, December 18th, we'll beginning Hungry and Homeless for the holidays. Hope to see you out there. Hope to have you go to hungryandhomeless.org, make a quick donation. All the money will be used in the community. That's the great thing about this. It is right here, community solutions. And I think this is going to be a great opportunity. I think we're going to have a great event, and I'm really looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to, as we move forward, meeting everybody here at the new station, since we've moved across the pond, if you will, to expand and reach out to a larger audience. We will see you tomorrow night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the Buddha sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. Democracy is coming. Today you'll get paid.
pictures and the podcast and the RSS feeds and all that, go. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.